mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 320. And I'm Adam, and I'm 18, the writer have to decide... Can I start that again? Damn this live Facebook feed. I'm Adam, and I'm 18, I have the right to decide what I look like. It could be very important on the Earth. And here's Isabella Pearson.
Goodbye, Jamie.
Deborah Melrose.
You have returned to us, Doctor. Your travels are over.
Andy Nunny.
It will be as though you have never existed.
Mary Lang.
For such a little woman, your mouth is too big.
And Kirby Butler Sloan.
I told you my gun's best.
And Isabella has my third choice quote, which is...
They'll forget me, won't they?
This is what happened when I end up leaving this podcast.
I've got multiple ones. Like, but it's impossible. You did not touch the screw. It just moved. Is it possible you are telling the truth?
Yes, I got, you must speak. You must speak. You must speak.
This is the security chief.
Oh, he was terrible, wasn't he?
He is in a future Doctor Who story as well. That actor. Anyway, right, let's move on. This week we're going to be looking at the War Games.
Yay.
Isabella, yeah, stop being irritating, please.
Oh, who? Isabella.
Well, she is. She's just sitting there doing stupid hand dancing. It's not Grease.
You put her on film. What do you expect?
Anyway, right,
who was it? Alan Rickman was in War Games.
Was he?
The original from the film War Games.
Oh.
Was that Alan Rickman?
I don't know. Not the Doctor Who story that we're watching.
Not the Doctor Who story, obviously. But I've got a feeling he was in the...
No, so the security chief was in Full Circle. I haven't seen Full Circle.
Oh, that's right. I told you he was in a future episode of Doctor Who. Moving on.
And he was also in The Ultimate Foe.
We haven't even got past the title sequence yet. This is what I was saying.
And right. We want to get a better...
If nobody behaves themselves, I am going to bypass... The individual stories, episode synopsis, aren't I, Isabella?
Yeah.
Right. Episode one begins with the TARDIS arriving in a quarry, but a very muddy quarry.
It is a rubbish tip. It is not a quarry.
I'll be quiet. Anyway, and Jamie finds some barbed wire and decides to see how sharp it is by pricking his finger on it. Really should have had a tetanus jab after that particular incident.
Yes, I was thinking that. Barbed wire was invented in the town that I went to university in.
Thank you, Kirby. Stop sucking your thumb. Right, and then they end up in the middle of a barrage of,
Barrage?
Yeah, barrage, basically.
Barrage of a barrage.
Gunfire.
Rather oddly, in the middle of this barrage, a woman turns up and all the explosions. The sun comes out as well.
Who just happens to be the wife of the producer.
She just happens to be strolling in no man's land as though it's...
Yeah.
As if there was loads of women at in no man's land in 1917. But the sun comes out and then it goes in again. And then, are you my mummy? Turn up. And they get kidnapped for the first time. Carstairs turns up and...
Are you keeping score?
The second time?
No, I'm not. But they get quickly rescued and end up in the trenches. And this particular scene of when they arrive in the trenches, especially with the sort of little captain with his moustache.
Very Blackadder, wasn't
it? It is so Blackadder. They even had Baldric there.
I kept expecting Baldric to be scratching his name on a bullet.
I actually got the script downloaded onto my Kindle, and it actually does refer to the captain in the first one as Captain Blackadder, which gives me his proper name.
Very good. Anyway, right, so, and also, obviously, General Smythe was a sort of rather sinister version of
Yes, but he was
Melchett.
In Red Dwarf.
He was in Red Dwarf?
He's in Red Dwarf. He's the cat priest.
What, Smythe?
Oh, yes, yes, who he was. Bloody hell, I've forgotten that.
Yeah, no, really? I can't take him seriously.
Because he looks so serious in this.
He wears the holy donut and the custard stains,
Yeah, I remember the episode, but I did not realise that.
I love the way he pronounced some of his words, like did and stuff like that. He's really, very
did.
Good.
Yeah. He's very, very English.
Yeah. And also, the chap that looks like Ian... Ian Kirk is in this one as well. It was obviously in an earlier episode of Doctor Who, because we mentioned the fact he looked a bit like Ian Kirk then as well. So, halfway through episode one, we see Smythe, and he's stalking down a rather round-looking TV monitor.
Oh, yeah, I did love the way they feed it in so slowly. They trickle information to you about the difference. That was just such a great way of doing it, especially in the first episode, because you're there going...
Yeah, well, they're obviously not in the First World War. Or if they are, there's something weird going on.
Debbie.
Yes.
Is this the first time you've seen this one?
Yes.
Of course it is. Ah. Have you not noticed that she's never seen any of the Patrick Troughton stories? We did mention this once before, didn't we, Andy?
We did indeed, yes.
I did notice there was some graffiti on one of the sort of walls as Ian Kirk comes out of the general.
Yes.
It says, Roll Death. What's that say, Isabella? Roll Death.
It said... I wrote it down somewhere.
Of course you wrote it down.
Can't read what it says.
There's one. I didn't see that one because you couldn't see everything. I rewound that.
There's a little cartoon of a German soldier, and it says "Roll on Death."
Roll on Death, and then there's another one that says
"Demobs too far away." That's what it said. Roll on Death, demobs too far away. That's quite
Say Kilroy was here this time, did it?
No, it didn't.
Oh, that's later. That sort of cropped up after the First World War.
Anyway, back to the story. The Doctor, Jamie and Zoe end up in Smythe's office. Smythe very quickly decides that they are spies.
No, they're not just spies. They're dangerous to
his plans. Obviously, when he gets his glasses on. A lot of these baddies really do need to visit Specsavers, don't they? I mean, it's quite a considerable problem they have with their eyesight. And anyway,
well, considering that... Master?
Yes?
Master?
Yes?
Considering that... In many cases, their spectacles don't fit them. They don't, the earpieces don't go far enough back to go over their ears and stuff like that.
Okay. Anyway, so...
And also, one of them wears a monocle, so is that only half effective as wearing glasses?
Maybe he was just a bit better at the...
If I may comment, if we're going to go through the stories at this pace, it's going to be the full 2 hours... talking just about the stories.
Don't worry, Mary. Mary, I won't let that happen. Trust me.
He's setting the theme.
He is the war chief, you know.
Anyway, back to the story. It culminates in Smythe manipulating with his glasses his colleagues into finding them guilty of espionage. And, of course, sentenced to death.
Guilty.
But Zoe's not sentenced there. She's sentenced to... What's she sentenced to? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Prison. Civilian prison.
And Jamie's sentenced... Because he's a deserter.
Yes.
He's a deserter.
He's sentenced to a military prison.
Well, yeah. No, he's sent back to his regiment. But, of course, they never actually find out what regiment it is. It doesn't actually make sense, does it?
No, they deserted from the Highlanders.
Yeah, you said they said the Highlander Regiment.
The Highland Regiment, calls Jamie a deserter from Highland Regiment, I have written down.
He is. Anyway.
Master. Yes. If I may say now, I predict Debbie to win.
Anyway, moving on. They end up with a firing squad. It reminds me a little bit of Castrovalva, Caves of Androzani.
Androzani, yes.
But obviously, Perry's not stood next to him as the guns fire. So, end of episode one. Quite a good little cliffhanger there. Episode two, they get rescued by Carstairs and his little back gang of rescuers. Pardon, Debbie?
The snipers shoots the firing squad because the Doctor's about to be shot.
Yeah, but there was umpteen of them, wasn't there? They only shot one, as far as I know.
Yeah.
They shot the guy who was going to say fire.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So that kind of stops it.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so Smythe is just about to escape one of the little TARDISes, and Ian Kirk wanders into the office, gets told off for what did you say?
Sidrats.
That's what they're called Sidrats.
Okay, Sidrats then. I'd like to call them TARDISes. I know it's an anagram, or Astrid is anyway. Will you stop leaning forward?
Well,
please?
The thing is
don't fart at them.
It's not, I'm not. I'm trying to see the screen where we've got Andy Nunny saying we're waiting, Alan T. Butcher having joined, and... Alan T. Butcher then saying, Burby, where are you? There's four people watching this.
The doctor keeps referring to them as TARDISes anyway.
Yes, it doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't matter.
The first inkling you get of it, other than the fact it materializes and dematerializes, is the noise.
The noise.
Yeah,
is,
yeah, we know it. What it
well, they left the brakes.
It's
on.
A bit of a hint, isn't it? That it might be. Oh, good grief! I've got to move. Where are you going? Mama, drink. Oi! Where are you going? You could have gone to the loo beforehand.
Well, I'm my mind is still boggled that is the cat guy.
It was about those being annoying.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that red dwarf.
I'm going to get told off for shouting. Anyway, right, so where do we get up to? Sorry, I got interrupted by Isabella and her naughtiness. Yeah, Jamie's in a little prison cell, and then a red coat sort of turns up and rather
complete
conveniently.
With his wig.
Yeah, complete with a woggy wig.
Well,
yeah.
It was a woggy wig, didn't they? It had to be like compulsory, wasn't it, I guess?
Was it?
Well, yeah, that's where they all dress, doesn't it, you know?
Okay. Meanwhile, Doctor and Zoe get picked up by Carstairs in a car, and the Doctor pretends he's the some sort of official from the Ministry, which is a bit like what he did in Power of the Daleks, actually, pretending he was some sort of official. It's a little bit of a full circle thing going on there. And he sort of manages to pass this little story on for a little while before he's found out, because he didn't have any papers after all. Oh, you're back.
Front and sides, too.
She's back. Oh, we've got to move again. Isabella? God's sake. Come on, my drink, and fold that seat back out.
I miss the squeaky chair. It's as if I'm right there.
It's not squeaky. Right, can we get on now?
Then you're just farting.
That's what I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, so as I was saying, this is another point in which they get incarcerated, and Ian Kirk's really pleased with himself when he realises he's able to deliver the prisoners back to Smythe. But unfortunately, I think they escaped, don't they? Or did they cleverly got away?
Well, I don't know. They did it so many times.
I was going to say.
They didn't escape, yes. Whatever again in the story, Kirby. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Oh, you don't know. You didn't watch it.
What?
Never mind.
What did you say?
Pardon?
What did you say?
I said they escaped, and you said, no. Well, they did. They did escape at some point, because they were escaping. And
then they were captured again, almost immediately.
So saying no is not entirely accurate, is it? Anyway, so Smythe decides that they're going to get a barrage of attack, because they're in an ambulance with a sort of cloth cover.
Master?
What?
That is a real, honest-to-goodness, authentic World War One ambulance.
How splendid. Well, I hope it would be.
We know!
Anyway, They go through this mist and disappear and then reappear on another road, but this time during some Roman period.
Oh, goody, goody, goody.
I beg your pardon?
No, sorry, it's a quote from Asterix and Obelix in Asterix and Obelix. It's a bit when he sees the Romans and Obelix goes, oh, goody, goody, goody.
Yes.
Yeah, because Obelix wants to fight with them.
Yeah, always.
A Roman period with paved roads.
Oh, yeah, no.
Do you realise you're not in shot?
You know, they invented concrete, so, you know.
Yeah.
They did invent concrete.
Ancient Roman.
Very clever. Anyway, moving on.
Except the chariot's not on the road. It's going across the field, and I'm sure, since there's no springs on it, I'm sure it's very bumpy.
The Doctor has sussed out that there's something alien going on here and wants to get into Smythe safe, where he thinks he might find a map of the...
We've switched episode 3, have we not?
Well, no, yes, we're on episode 3 now.
Yeah, we're in 3.
Yeah, we're in episode. Don't worry, Mary. I'm under control. I'm under control. It's under control, Mary. Mary?
Yeah, it's a better signal to you. You're definitely under control, mate.
Anyway, so this sort of random soldier turns up just as they've set the fuse going to blow up the safe. So it's quite a funny scene in which they're trying to get rid of it.
Which one of you burped?
Not me.
Maybe.
So he does get the map. But they end up getting kidnapped by the Russians, I think, this time. Is that the Russians?
The Russians.
And the Doctor then uses sonic screwdriver to...
It's interesting. No, it's not the Russians. It's the Germans.
It's what?
American Civil War.
The American
No, the one with the one being shown the way the sonic screwdriver works is German.
Oh, German. I do apologise.
Yeah, they just got onto the other side of the trenches.
Yeah, they're on the German side, and the German general calls in to...
of course it's German. Well done, Debbie. I'm just seeing if you're paying attention. Anyway, okay. So use his sonic screwdriver to show the soldier that... Their story about being in a TARDIS. Will you stop messing around?
Well, you've got the fact that they talk to the captain about it, and then as soon as he talks to the general with his monocle on, he doesn't believe them again, so he has to do the gun trick again.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
Because it was a really clever little effect, and they needed to use it a second time. Cool, wouldn't it?
Let's replay the film. Sorry. Carry on, Mary.
I just said replay the film clip.
Yes. Well, it saves a bit of money.
There are the DVD is so clear that you can see the little fake scar on going over his eye and how they actually applied it. It's fascinating.
Okay. Anyway, let me see the first wide shot of the hub of the War Games. You're out of shot again, by the way. And there's some great scenery, Debbie, with the little corporal stripes on the wall. I did. You liked it, didn't you, Isabella? Thank you. And then we meet the war chief.
That's the security.
No, chief. The security chief talks like that. Yeah. But we meet the war chief.
Yay!
And his weird facial hair.
Yeah, they had that, didn't they? The warlords was quite interesting too. Mm.
And he's very, very much like the Master, isn't he? And I can understand why people think that it was an earlier incarnation.
Yeah, I did wonder, because it's possible. I hadn't seen this before and I hadn't heard too much blurb about it, but I had heard a huge argument and read a huge argument about whether or not it was the Master.
Mm.
But the main argument is that he was killed too quickly to allow regeneration, so... Yeah.
Quite possibly. Or maybe not.
Exactly.
So, but what I thought...
he could be faking.
Exactly.
He probably was, because he ended up being in Rent-A-Ghost for quite a few years.
Yes, he did.
Where, of course, Paula Rent-A-Ghost, there's connections with Rent-A-Ghost, apart from him, of course. That the wasn't it? They didn't have some sort of horse in it. They ended up being the Murker.
The ghost horse.
Yeah, which ended up being the Murker or something like that, wasn't it? I think.
Something like
Same people inside the costume. See, Kirby's got all quiet.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Rent-A-Ghost.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, we'll go on to YouTube. I've done it now.
I'm doing it, don't worry.
Oh, I bet you are. That's what she said. Can I have my bell, please? What have you done with my bell?
My connection will be horrible if I have to go off the tube.
You don't have to. I've got a sound effect. So, moving on. They get shot at again, and then they end up... hiding behind a tree in the American Civil War zone. And I think they end up in a shed. That's right, yes.
It's fascinating to the info text during the whole Civil War section.
Oh, no, are you watching something?
Sorry. it should be better now.
Should it?
Anyway... In the info text during the whole Civil War section, American Civil War section, it's interesting reading the British view of the American Civil War. It's perfect the way there's none of the hemming and hawing over the reasons for the war.
You stop flapping your ears.
That we have over here in the South.
Isabella, you're not even in shot. What's the point of you being in here if you're not going to actually be in shot? The viewers want to see annoying 10-year-olds.
Are you sure about that?
All right, stay there then. That suits me.
What episode are we in?
We're in episode 3, I think. Anyway, they're hiding in a barn, and then one of the TARDIS-y things turn up.
There you go. We're now in part 4.
Shut up about the proper name of them. I'm going to call them TARDIS-y things. And it disappears just as Jamie's about to try to capture it, and he fails to capture it, because I think they're actually trying to get the Doctor to headquarters, aren't they, if I remember right?
We're about to have an interruption from young Stormageddon, who is still trying to celebrate his birthday. Hello, you.
Happy birthday, Zach.
He was blasting his eyes out a minute ago. Now he's stopped. Now he's getting personal attention. Yeah, do, probably, you, do you all like the video of his birthday cake?
He's probably bamboozled by Kirby.
I think Hopey's about to drop off because he looks like his eyes are going
Just like his dad. What's the matter? We haven't got any conventions on at the moment.
Say night-night.
I have posted...
Night-night.
Okay. Night-night. Right, night-night. Go on, back to your Stormy. Right, Mommy's taking a ride. Thanks, folks. Night-night, Stormy.
I've posted pictures
of God, he's off again. There we go.
Chief in Red Ghost and General Smart in Red Dwarf. There you go.
Thank you, Debbie. Right. So, they all end up in... the Doctor and Zoe end up in what looks like one of those chillers, all these sort of flaps that come down.
It does, doesn't it?
Walk-in chiller. It may well be, because there's lots of people in there. But it's like bigger on the inside, obviously, because as Zoe keeps hinting, a bit like a TARDIS. Jamie and Jennifer get tied up by the... I don't know if it's the Yankees or the opposite to the Yankees.
Well, I think they get tied up by both of them, don't they? I think they're all
But this,
they want to give it a go, don't they?
This soldier comes in. It's a very well-known British actor, but I can't remember his name. How was his accent? It seemed quite good to me.
Actually, it wasn't bad.
What are you talking about?
Well, there was I don't know if it was a southern...
He's talking about the Confederate soldier's accent.
Yeah, a Confederate soldier. Thank you very much, Kirby. But he's a very, very good, and he used to be in lots of things in the 70s and 80s. But
Wasn't he in Desmond's?
Well, one of them, the one that plays
no,
Harper.
No, I'm not talking about...
Harper. Aren't you talking about Harper?
Yeah, I'm talking about Harper.
No,
yeah,
I don't know who you're talking about. I'm not talking about the lovely Rudolph Walker, who's in EastEnders.
Rudolph Walker is his name.
No, I'm not talking about him. We're talking about...
not him.
Oh, never mind. Shut up singing, for God's sake. It's like having Alicia on the show.
I think you're talking about
worried.
Leroy.
Hey?
I think you're talking about Leroy.
Who's Leroy?
The Confederate soldier.
Was it called? He was very southern accent, wasn't it? He had a very so it's him, not the Rudolph Walker character. I have to say Rudolph Walker stole the blooming scenes he was in big time. But
yes.
That was a bit further ahead in the story. I did love their round monitors. They're really quite cool. Nice to see they're
bringing... he was... Leslie Schofield, Schofield, whatever.
Schofield.
He was Schofield. He was also in The Face of Evil.
Was he?
And he was in Blake 7, Spacefall.
Was he?
And he was in Star Wars.
I know he was in Star Wars. I remember him being in Star Wars, yes.
And also he was in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Thank you for that. Moving on.
God, not that thing.
What did we think of the rather cool little ways that they were controlling these little TARDIS-y things? There were these sort of magnetic...
Fridge magnets.
That's a really cool and original idea for that time.
They were fridge magnets.
Shut up.
Actually, not a fridge magnet. It's one of these kids' things. You've got a felt board. You've got shapes.
No, well, they look more like magnets.
Up a Zach now.
But the idea of not having conventional switches and stuff like that was quite ahead of its time. I was quite impressed with that. I don't care what you lot say, because you don't really know what you're talking about. Do they, Isabella?
Yes, we do, Isabella.
Do they, Isabella?
Yeah.
One.
Yes,
two.
Oh, dear. Don't count.
She's not answering me. It's very rude.
That's the most terrifying thing a child can hear is a parent.
Yeah.
Two and a half. Two and three quarters. Oh, come on. Moving on. Oh, yeah. So then we see them. These weird...
Well, we're on the topic of actors. Guy playing Harper.
Yes.
Off. Walker, for
Rudolph
those who
Walker.
Follow EastEnders, he is alive and well on Albert Square.
He's a legend.
He's a regular on EastEnders.
And he still steals the scenes he's in.
Yes, and he does.
I have to say, I'm a heterosexual man, but I find him quite a beautiful man.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
He was the examiner in the first episode of Mr. Bean.
He was. He was indeed.
Yes.
But he's been in loads of things. Obviously he was in Love Thy Neighbour, which was quite a racist series at the time, but I remember being quite charmed by it.
Oh, God, yes. You couldn't broadcast that now, could you?
It was racist in
yes,
pointing
I watched that once.
The black family in a positive way.
That and was
the,
allowed to air. You know,
made the white family
but we are
look,
talking about early 70s. It was a bit world there.
The undertone of it was in favour, trying to sort of show racism, basically. But unfortunately, the dialogue they used was incredibly racist. But I don't. I mean, if he wouldn't have appeared in it if he thought there was a problem, surely. But there you go. But yeah, he's a brilliant actor, Rudolph Walker, such a legend. Moving on, we haven't even got to his scenes yet, and you're talking about him. So it shows our impact here. Yeah, the Doctor and Zoe put on these really weird sort of glasses with crosses on them prior to going to see some sort of Doctor Who convention talk about the special mind machine, that, you know, the machines they use to process the... Oh, Rudy's here. Rudolph Walker's turned up in his slightly dirty suit. And I love the way they one, he portrays the character, and one, that they make him a very strong... character. It's obviously a leader, because he more or less in future scenes in the two episodes he's in, he is sort of become a leader of men, which is unusual for an ethnic character in the late 1960s. But where are you going?
I'm gonna go to bed.
You just wanted to read the question. Are you getting bored?
No, I'm just tired.
You're just tired. So that was a really good input. Thanks, Isabella. Wait. Do you want me to move?
I've got it now.
Isabella has left the podcast. Temporarily, of course. Right. Now I'm in the middle of the screen. Rick Stevenson. Do you mind? Can you be a little bit quieter? Rick Stevens has joined the viewership. Magic's just flapped his ears again. Bye, Isabella. Can I get a kiss?
Bye.
Where's mine?
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah, bye. Oh, fake affection. Fake affection. Yes, good night.
Night.
Yes.
Is she starting to get tired of Doctor Who? Is she becoming Alicia?
No, you've just done her head in, Kirby, so she can't take anymore.
It's a school night, Kirby.
It's a school night. Well, the dogs have escaped you as well. Good night.
Yes. Good night, Isabella. See you in the playground.
Isabella, my wife is Isabella, don't, you're Debbie, aren't you? Sorry. My wife is asleep upstairs. Right, can we get on? Right, so the Doctor and Zoe, I just find them really funny, these glasses with the crosses on them. Well, the scientist, wasn't it? He gets car stairs out of a cupboard and shows how to process somebody. And because that culminates in, obviously, car stairs sees everybody as a soldier until he sees Jamie and Zoe, and he says they're spies. And the Doctor manages to talk his way out of that situation again. Now, this scientist bloke, I was looking through it, trying to work out what his name was, because he was the first one in Doctor Who to utter the phrase Time Lords. So well, I couldn't find that his character's name.
I posted that on Facebook a few days ago.
Did you?
Yes.
How marvellous. So, yeah, there's lots of running around and... the episode ends with Carstairs pulling a gun on Zoe. I think that was the end of episode 5. Where are we now?
Yeah.
So episode 4. This is episode 5. Of course, they've captured the sinister monocle bloke, who's trying desperately. He tries actually in one scene to.
Yeah, he gets.
Who's eating?
Me. He gets the small.
Sorry. Who is it? A while back got banned for eating. It was Robert, wasn't it? We initiated a ban for rustling sweet packets on the show, didn't we, Kirby?
I guess.
I mean, you guess. Anyway, sorry, right. Debbie. Carry on. What are you saying? Debbie?
What?
What did you say?
Banned her. She's not going to say now.
I banned her from eating sweets, or rustling sweets. You can eat sweets. Jelly babies specifically. Yeah, go on.
I was
talking about the scene in which the sinister monocle bloke tried to hypnotise Rudolph Walker's character.
You've got that young lad who, you think, oh God, they've left a young lad in charge of the dangerous general, and he tries to persuade him to think...
That's later! That is later! Oh, no, it isn't. I'm talking about a scene in which he tries to...
That's episode 6. Bloody hell.
I'm talking about the part where he tries to hypnotise Rudolph Walker's character. Was it Harper? I can't remember now.
Harper.
Yeah. And of course, he has no luck. Right. And of course, it's really weird the sort of mind machine that the war chief has, the sort of looking into people's minds and the little faces that are flashed up in front of the screen. In fact, there's some very interesting clips they've borrowed from previous episodes of Doctor Who in this story as well, actually. Especially in the last episode, which were used in
instructions. Yeah, because there's no 21st century time zone. But why? But then this security chief, you realise that there's a big bit of a brouhaha between him and the war chief because he won't tell him the truth about Zoe, who says that she was a fellow nurse to the other lady.
Ah.
In 1917 zone. He doesn't tell the security chief that she's from out of time.
Well, these episodes are really great because the Doctor sort of manipulates all the situation, especially when Carstairs is unprocessed. So he tends to do up his binds.
Yeah.
And then we meet, what's her character's name? Russell. Yeah. Russell turns
up. He pulls apart Harper and the other guy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he turns up out of the blue, doesn't he? But because he's part of the Resistance, so the Resistance turn up in this particular story. I tell you what,
Resistance is useless.
What I also liked about the scenery, which you dissed earlier on, was the circular sort of design on the wall, which was quite striking. By the door, there was a great big circular, spirally type design, black and white.
Yes, people commented about that on my picture from the other day. Because they're standing in front of it when they mention Time Lords.
I just want to say hi to Anne-Marie Blackall, who's just said hi, everyone.
Hi, Anne-Marie Blackall.
Hello.
Yeah, so that design, I seem to remember Alistair using it on either the video cover or the book cover of this particular story, that spirally thing. And then we see some photos of cast members when we look into the mind. Oh, that well, the Doctor sees when he looks into Zoe's mind. So this leads to some soldiers and their weird guns shooting. Now that effect that they used for shooting was similar to effect that we've seen earlier. Was it the Ice Warriors? No, that was a wiggly thing, wasn't it? That circular sort of thing.
Not sure. There is something. It's the Ice Warriors gun just before it all
could have been. There's something very familiar about it. The other thing I found very familiar: the door opening
sound. Reminds me of the Tomb of the Cybermen
But also the door opening effect was the old Dalek door opening effect, which they actually used for the TARDIS door as well, unusually. Kirby's gone quiet because he knows I'm right.
Huh? Why would I object?
Well, normally if you think I'm wrong, you butt in and say, now. Well, obviously I'm right, so you're not.
I thought they'd stolen the wall from Tomb of the Cybermen.
He doesn't say master when he thinks I'm really wrong. He just says, now.
I'm looking for Alistair's illustration. That's why I'm quiet.
For God's sake. Anyway, a TARDIS thingy turns up. Jamie and a few others turn out of it. And conveniently on this occasion, their machines, their guns, with a weird sort of, I suppose it looks a bit like a pebble dropping in a bit of water effect, doesn't kill them, because Fraser Hines has a contract to the end of the story, not to halfway through it.
The Doctor states that there must be a way of adjusting how strong it is.
Obviously, otherwise Jamie would have died in that scene. However, I think in modern Doctor Who, knowing that Fraser Hines was going to leave at the end of the series, he probably would have been killed off at that time just to shock the viewers. What do you reckon? No? Okay, I'll shut up. Or maybe killed at that time and then brought back for Series 10 to to be saved from the moment just before death.
Yes, because with Moffat, dead doesn't mean dead.
No, not at all.
Okay. Oh, I clicked on the wrong doodah. Sorry, I'm just waiting for... I'm on the second disc now.
Whee! Oh, I need to shift discs.
What? Shift discs?
I need to change my disc.
Why did you go discs?
Why not?
You rapping.
It's not the ice one,
is it a DVD-changing rap?
No.
So anyway, so I'm just waiting for it to load. It's just going for its... To Entertain logo coming up. I'll have a quick sip of Pepsi Max.
I spent a lot of yesterday evening watching the third disc, all the extras. Fascinating stuff.
Oh, I just realised we haven't got any feedback.
I spent most of yesterday evening sitting there going, wow.
Shut up, Debbie.
And telling Tom all about it, the poor
Debbie.
Man. What's going on?
Debbie.
Yes, that's all I said.
I did say earlier on, if anybody tries to do a synopsis, not a synopsis, a review of what they think of the story before we get to the end of the story, I will skip. So this is your last warning, everyone. It's nearly loaded now. Oh, no, it hasn't.
Mine loaded very quickly.
It's doing the... No, it's just playing all the start of venue.
I'm getting told off a lot tonight. I'm just going to sit here and sulk.
You never get told off, Debbie. You're perfect.
No.
All right, there we go. By the way, you know, I'll talk about change the subject slightly. You know, you when you granted me that parking space in front of your disused car.
Yes.
I asked Dawn, who lives in the house next door but to you, but in our road, if I can borrow her side passageway.
I was going
to
say,
I beg your pardon.
Side passage, Andy.
Did she say yes?
She said yes. So now I have a shortcut to either your house or
Well, I might ask. I've never thought to ask her. I go walking all the way round because it's about the same length as a decent song to walk round to your house.
No, she won't let you do it. She's because I've lived here for 20 years, so I've got residency rights. Albert Street clan and all that. Anyway, so yes, Jamie isn't killed, obviously. I like the doors that look like keyholes as well. They're quite cool.
Yes. This is the episode where we hear about Time Lords.
Yes, it is. Yeah, so the Doctor is now sort of teamed up with Carstairs and Zoe at the moment. Jamie gets his mind probed. And they find
no, mind, not the mind probe!
They just, it's just a load of oblongs all stacked on top of each other.
It wouldn't take very long to probe James Myron, would it?
There's something odd going on with the scientist's glasses. We know, so they're a bit sort of...
They're very peculiar, aren't they?
There was bits in the middle that you could see his eyes through, but they're a bit frosted around the edges.
Yeah, I wonder what the purpose of that is.
Probably because he couldn't see a thing with them
they
on.
They were bottle.
Yeah, they were made trying to make them look like really thick glasses, but in fact they were probably just two panes of glass that were quite clear. Anyway, the war chief and his strange...
Really super thick glasses that the war chief and that wear... No, I mean the security chief wears. If he really needed them that thick or if he was blinded by those lenses because they're so thick.
Yeah, I don't think in this case. I think they're made to look thick, and that's why they look a bit odd. Anyway, talking back to the war chief and his weird facial hair, I'm trying to work out whether that was painted on or whether it was actually grown that way. What do you reckon, Deb?
I don't know, because you see a lot of it nowadays as well.
It does look real. So
yeah,
if it is real.
Yeah, and Warlord's one as well, and it's like,
But if it is painted on, I think Philip Maddox was in fact real hair, because it wasn't too elaborate.
Sure, Deb posted of him in whatever that other show is. He has it there too.
Yeah, Rent-A-Ghost, yeah.
You've looked up Rent-A-Ghost after I advised you.
That could be his.
Yeah. Anyway, this is the episode also that we see Patrick Troughton's son. Like you said, the young soldier set to look after this baddie on his own. Really wise move that. But initially, he resists the hypnotism, doesn't he? This sort of long sort of backwards and forwards thing between him and the monocled baddie ends up with a load of resistant people coming in, and he subsequently gets shot dead.
He has a fist fight with Russell, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he's just about to shoot, doesn't he? He's just about to shoot. I mean, his shoulders go up. Because he's getting shot. That's what happens, you get your shoulders go up. I mean, it's quite funny.
And then back, Master.
Yeah.
In the next scene, when we're back in the main control area.
Can we do this scene first? Then we'll move on to the next. God, so I'm just thinking about when he was standing there and he almost said, Hepesh, my old friend. Oh, sorry, that's a few. You won't get that. It's a future episode. Sorry, I do apologize. And because he fell in love with Joe, didn't he? Oh, sorry, that's another bit of a future episode. Sorry.
I haven't seen either of the Peladon.
He's only in
stories,
one of them.
So. I haven't seen either of the Peladon stories.
Okay, sorry,
so
you can go on to the next scene now, Kirby. Sorry.
All of a sudden, the Doctor and company start running around in Captain Jack greatcoats.
They do indeed, yes.
What was the point of putting Zoe in a cap and a coat? Because, I mean, they never spot, yeah, anyone would spot you. She's a woman. I mean, what was the point of that?
Because it looked cool.
I know. Yeah.
Anyway, Ian Kirk says he posted feedback at 4 p.m. because I did mention the fact that I just said, oh, we haven't got any feedback. Fortunately, we have.
Yeah, he posted it on my...
All right. I've been busy. This is the first time I've actually been... Deb had my computers. I've only just put them all back together again prior to doing the podcast. And I haven't been able to see much on the line of... thank you, Ian. Moving on. Right, so the Doctor and Carstairs, and Jamie for that matter, managed to get into the TARDIS machiney thing. But the War Chief switches off the dimensional control and they all start getting a bit squished. It reminded me a little bit of one of the Star Wars films, actually, that particular scene.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The garbage disposal. Obviously, they were left with no choice but to... the Doctor waves this white handkerchief as he comes out. And, of course, Jamie and Carstairs are forced out. And something happens. What happens? The Doctor throws something. Some gas goes off.
He picks up these two gas valves when he goes to get the processing machine.
That's what it was.
And he has both of them. And he uses one to get into the machine. Yeah. Then he uses it again to get away.
Yeah, very clever. He gets away. And he also nicks the little gadget, the little fridge magnets that they used to control the dimensional control, etc., etc. So it allows them to get away. And of course, they have these so many scenes where the war chief and the security chief are suspicious of each other. And the security chief is forever trying to sort of catch the war chief out. Conveniently has a recording device on their control board as well.
Of the three main leaders, there two of them have the first name of War, and two of them have the last name of Chief.
Related.
Yeah. Was it really that funny, Debbie?
I liked it.
I enjoyed it as well. Because you're a grumpy old git, actually.
Anyway, so this is the War Chief turns up, old Philip Maddock, bless him. He tries to suppress his Welsh accent, but there's a couple of words he sort of pronounces really weirdly, which sort of rather give it away sometimes. I can't tell you what they are because I've forgotten. Like I said, then there's a three-way sort of verbal battle goes on between the war chief, the warlord, and the security chief. None of them seem to like each other. They seem to be all sort of, I'm superior to you. No, I'm superior to you, and all that sort of thing going on. So the resistance is now in full flow, but they need, I think there's the, not quite at this point, I'm moving on a bit ahead. I'm rambling now because I'm trying to find something to talk about. There's not much going on this episode apart from
lots of
being chased and being shot at and a lot of scheming going on and sort of just infiltrating people into the resistance and they're trying to create one great big force to fight the...
I like the Doctor setting up that time zone barrier all around the chateau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also they realise that they have to get hold of Olvia, the... I can't remember what nationality he was now, but it was quite
Mexican.
Hispanic. Oh, Mexican, yes.
El bandito.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just love their arrival, which hasn't happened yet, unfortunately. But
he and Salamander would have gotten along great.
They sneaked in, and while everyone was asleep, it was quite amusing. And his sort of treatment of Zoe was quite funny as well. Quite correct as well, obviously. But, what on earth was that?
Was it me?
Was that Andy falling asleep?
Andy, have you fallen asleep?
No, I'm still here.
What was that?
That was my response to Adam's comment there. I'm surprised that Mary didn't leap all over him.
This is what I was trying to provoke, a reaction. But I think Mary and Debbie are sort of slightly immune to my...
That he comes from, so...
Mary and Debbie are quite immune to my fake sexism.
Yes, unfortunately, yeah.
Anyway, it's the only way I get to wind women. I don't get a lot of joy out of life, but winding women up is one of my very few.
How does Alpha Debbie react to that?
Because Alpha Debbie loves me. Threat your
Alpha Debbie. Debbie responds the same way as Beta Debbie.
She wouldn't admit it.
I can imagine, yeah. And
yes, Beta Debbie loves me as well, but in a totally different sort of way.
A platonic way, I was hoping you were going to say there.
I said a different way.
Well, exactly. I was agreeing. I was saying a
platonic. It's obviously platonic. Good grief.
Grief. United.
Does that come from Pluto? That was a joke there, Debbie. You missed it completely.
I did. I was talking.
Yeah, obviously, as usual. Anyway, moving on. We're in episode 8, I believe, and we're seeing some great scenes Villa.
I like the way
the Doctor pronounces Villa.
I like the way Zoe dresses up Jamie.
Oh yeah, that was really good. The way he sort of almost staggered in, it was obviously all that weight.
Yeah, he swaggers in, but he looks even younger than he does.
Yes, yeah.
Well, that was really well done.
Anyway, basically these next episodes are just them building up the resistance force into a sort of, you know, a sort of big group that they can, well, the Doctor thinks can overcome the War Chief's little gang. Pardon me, sorry.
Oh dear, hey, that's my job to do that.
Hang on, have I got to write? Oh, yeah. The Doctor, meanwhile, is forced to... He gets kidnapped, doesn't he, basically, very quickly. And is forced to take sort of allegiance with the three baddies. But he has... The most difficult scene is when he looks like he's betrayed all his friends. I think we know... Even if you watch the first time, he hasn't actually done that. He's got a plan.
And I think obviously Jamie and Zoe know that. Yeah, I think Carstairs has a fairly good idea that's what's going on.
Well, there was a point earlier in the Troughton era in which the Doctor did something and Jamie wasn't quite sure whether he really trusted the Doctor or not. But after they resolved that, Jamie has got complete trust in the Doctor, even in these scenes, and Zoe to that extent. And
it's a massive wink to Zoe, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that really is a cartoon, you know, wink of the eye, isn't it?
Yes. But obviously Villa is not so convinced. And I kill you!
Exactly, there is he. No, your machine did that work! He's like, shut up!
But they're quite good scenes, actually. There's a scene of men that, of course, everything just spirals out of control and the Doctor realises the only way he hasn't got any choice but to contact the Time Lords and put himself in a lot of danger. But, of course, he's not a selfish person. He realises that all these people have to be returned to their homes and, of course, that the war games have to stop. And the only way he can do that is by creating a little box and communicating the whole thing to the Time Lords. And, of course, it does... In future, Neil Gaiman beautifully brought that back.
Yes.
It's absolutely how I do my notes from now on.
In little boxes.
Is it the Doctor's wife, that particular story? I can't remember now.
Yes.
Yeah. So, of course...
Affirmative.
Affirmative, Master.
The Time Lords are now in on it. The Doctor, Jamie Get away, and Zoe, quick, leg quick, it. Quick, but unfortunately... Just as they're getting to the TARDIS, things go a bit Kirby, start slowing down.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, blast, I've just closed down the software. That was your fault, Kirby.
Yeah, I hope you're still recording.
Of course I'm still... Are you recording your end? Because I think I might have... I haven't checked at the audio to see if you're recording. Say something.
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 Oh, good.
Something.
Yeah, it's working.
So,
you had me worried there for a minute.
I've been heart attack over now.
I get very tired. Don't get much sleep because I'm so busy all the time. I'm going away on Wednesday. Hopefully, get a break from everything.
Where are you going?
Newcastle. Right. So, which episode was that? Was that episode 9?
He's going to that fabulous Doctor Who thing.
Oh, that convention's next week.
Mm.
No, wrong episode. That's probably.
Be sure and take some coal with you to Newcastle.
No, he doesn't play for Newcastle. He retired a few years ago.
Oh, very good, Andy. Oh, yeah, I'm impressed with that one. Briefly, that was one of your best ones.
Thank you.
Anyway, so they do. They do.
That tall, of
they do get into the TARDIS set, which looks really clean and bright.
Excellent.
What?
Well, they were cleaning it up, weren't they?
For what?
The Time Lords were clean. Oh, bloody hell.
No, they hadn't got in it then. By then, you silly woman.
Oh. I don't know what.
Great man you are.
Oh, bless her. Anyway, so no.
There's this big crack over one of the dials because what had happened was when they put control room set away.
Oh,
I'd love to have been able to hear what he's saying, wouldn't you, everybody?
It'd be great to hear what Kirby's saying, wouldn't it? But he's opened another page. Yeah.
what name is crack was it that opened up there?
Andy!
No, it's. Hang on, Amy's crack was referred to.
Will you stop it?
What?
My cats are watching me with a very disgusted look.
Some people have got dirty minds, haven't they?
Can we move on, please? Anyway, so there was a lovely scene when they do get into the TARDIS, where the Doctor sort of because Jamie asks the question, you know, why did you run away? And absolutely fantastic little scene. And I'm listening very carefully to the dialogue to see if it really ties into, you know, everything that came afterwards, and it pretty much does, because obviously the Doctor has mentioned a few times similar stories to why he left. But carry on, Kirby. Yes.
According to the info text, they had included much more detail in the script that they left out, but it including specifically saying stealing the TARDIS, etc., etc. So they had, by this point, they had firmly established the backstory.
Yes.
And but they made sure that it would go forward.
But it was really cool watching
this Kirby broadcasting from his bathroom.
Yes.
I can imagine Peter Capaldi saying these lines.
Well, you had the info text up again, did you not?
No, not right now, no.
Oh, see, and now you sound fine.
All right, Anity Butcher says, the War Sea. What does that mean?
Chief, probably.
He's probably got cut off short. It's his laser comments. I was about to reply to his laser comments, but perhaps we won't.
Hey, can I move on? I'd say Peter Capaldi could easily have said some of the lines that the Doctor said in those scenes. Then we have a sort of scene borrowed from another previous episode of Doctor Who, the TARDIS landing on the sea, and then the pathetic thing of it sinking, and with this the shot for a fishbowl or something like that. And there's a great shot of the Doctor running around each segment of the console trying to control it, which rather illustrates
just hitting keys at random, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's interesting because obviously we see in, what was it, Soul on Earth, when the Doctor says that the actual console is designed to be flown by, what was it, 6 Time Lords, one on each panel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, so, Master.
What?
When are we supposed to be
back when I first became a fan in 1979 or something. And I was reading up all about Doctor Who. I read then that it was designed for 6 Time Lords.
Thank you, Kirby. So, right then, moving on. There's various stock footage shown on the monitor to indicate that they've gone some really weird places because the Time Lords have actually got control of the TARDIS. The Doctor eventually gives in. So, oh, come on, let's go.
How can they suddenly control him now? I mean, surely if he'd have renegade and run away, they'd have done it earlier and hauled him back when he, as soon as he...
They were playing with him.
Mm.
Oh, apparently this particular video thread is a conversation starter. 10 comments so far. Woo, keep it coming. It's like having feedback, which we don't get much of. No offence here, you do give us feedback, but oh, never mind, moving on. The scene in which the TARDIS, the monitor shows all those little TARDISes, very reminiscent of a future episode of Doctor Who that wasn't on that long ago. Was it In the Name of the Doctor or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. There's going to be a trial, and the War Lord is on trial initially.
Trial of a Time Lord?
Yeah, he tries to frame the Doctor. And the Time Lords use a strange sort of staring at the bloke thing that makes him go, the lights, don't they?
Only he sees.
But he tries to frame the Doctor, and then his little cronies turn up, shoot a few technicians, nearly get away.
Who were cleaning the TARDIS, there you go.
Yeah, they were cleaning the TARDIS, it went all dark in the TARDIS. And then this little force field appears, which they don't bother using a strange effect for force fields in the future, but on this occasion they did.
I love that effect.
It's a really good effect. And, of course, then they sort of say, you're going to be dematerialised. Dreadful way to go.
Yeah, that's where my quote came from. It's weird, as though you had never existed.
Yeah.
And so the doctor then has his proper trial, and he sort of basically says that, look, I've been fighting against evil and stuff like that. And there's a few sort of shots of some baddies that the doctor and us know quite well. I was just interested at the time, having known that obviously they didn't want to have any more Dalek stories because of the Terry Nation going to America thing, that they actually had a shot of a Dalek for that particular scene. Yes.
They, for all of these baddies, they filmed them all. They didn't take those as film clips from other stories. They brought them in to the studio.
You could tell.
But in the Yeti, that's John Levine.
Is it?
Yes.
John Levine is going to be at the convention I'm going to over the weekend.
Cool.
Nice.
Dimensions 2016 in Newcastle, and I bet nobody that is listening to this show is going to that. So I'm going to be wearing all my Doctor Who 20 megabyte Doctor Who t-shirts and stuff, which I purchased specially for the event.
Wait, you're going to wear them all at the same time?
I bought two, so that's one for one for Saturday and Sunday, and I've got one in my box for
nighty these days.
I'm going to use my other one for the Friday. But yes, John Levine is there for one of the days.
That's three.
We'll our t-shirts for bedtime. Anyway,
so more messages have come through. Auntie Butcher says typing. Hang on. He said first of all, it went off prematurely in my hands. And then he says typing. Auntie Nunny says premature punctuation. Aww. And Jeff Waddle says, I am the security chief. Moving on. So there's a few.
Master?
Hang on. Oh, I nearly got to the end of the episode. Yes.
It was in this, even though I had heard this before, it was watching the War Games this time around that I realized that one Time Lord was Gulliver.
Yeah, well done, yes.
So.
But the other interesting part is one of the Time Lords in this particular story was also in the Three Doctors later on. So it was nice that they were able to.
Yes, the first one that they ran across.
Correct, yes. So I'm quite pleased they did that. Also, they brought back a character from Zoe's first story to play that little return to the.
Seeing that that's the one of the stories so far I haven't yet seen, because I remember why I didn't see it. I need to go back and watch.
Are you telling me that you haven't watched all the stories?
Wheel in Space.
One of the rules of the journey.
I missed Wheel in Space. I think I was out of town or something.
Everybody, what do we think of Kirby's not watching all the stories in order like we were supposed to?
Well, where in the recent book does that feature?
I didn't.
You didn't what?
I missed a couple, didn't I? So I had to go back and watch them.
But you've watched them?
Yeah.
Kirby?
I will go back and watch it.
Right,
except it means watching missing episodes.
Might have to ask him some questions on that particular story. Anyway, back to this. Yeah, so the doctor sort of pleads his innocence to the charges, while by Jamie and Zoe are sort of kept in behind the force field. Then they try to get away again, rather pointlessly, across a sort of rather strange set that has lots of dry ice in it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that is weird.
That was weird.
Looks a bit like a representation of the Matrix in some ways. But eventually, of course, they get caught and they just say their very, very emotional goodbyes.
Red pill or blue pill?
Very, very emotional goodbyes. And the doctor says...
I nearly cried.
The doctor says, they'll forget me, won't they? No, they'll remember their first story with it, which is really, really sad.
Why do they have to forget it?
I nearly cried, honestly. I was quite surprised at how involved I was at that point, that I was nearly crying about the gentle...
I think I felt emotional on previous times I've watched this story, at that particular scene, because obviously we watched them all, Jamie and the Doctor, specifically, over, what would be 3 years at this stage. Mm-hmm. And it is very sad that unique relationship that they had is at an end, and the way it ended, and to think that they've all had all those adventures and are not going to remember any of them, it's quite painful, and it's not their fault. And what difference would it make if Jamie was returned to the time at which he's left and couldn't, because he can't change anything, can he, apart from he'd have a bit of knowledge of future events, but not many that actually have any bearing on his life.
And would anyone believe him if he tried to tell the stories of where he's been and what he's done. I mean, he could end up being quite a misfit in his society.
Yeah, he's a misfit, or he'll be a brilliant storyteller. Six years around the fire telling the kids all about his weird adventures.
And Zoe came from the future anyway, so again, what difference would it make if she knew? Because there'd be obviously he's done that to them too. The Time Lords have done that to them too. What about all the other people, the Doctors, you know?
Travelled with.
Why pick on Jamie and Zoe?
What about go back and find Victoria, you know?
Mm. Well, then there's Donna Noble and how she had to have...
Yeah, I know, but that was really weird, wasn't it? But more comments have come through. Alan T. Butcher says, nearly cried stone heart. And then he says, I was sobbing.
I know, I don't tend to cry very much about anything. So, just even squeeze one tear out is me being very emotional.
Dead. I think... with my new shortcut, it would take me about 2 minutes to get down to your house and give you a hug. Do you want me to come down?
I thought every place on the Isle of Wight is only about 2 minutes from
We could get a little walkie-talkies, Deb.
Yeah, they're called mobile phones.
Yeah, mobile phones.
They're not
come
from the Isle of Wight yet.
Walkie talkies would be really good.
That'd be cool. That'd be direct.
We were going to get them for Isla and her best friend who lives next door, but they're moving house. So.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so the Zoe goes back to the wheel. Myth DVD stopped.
Meets Tanya.
Yeah, and the Doctor watches them as they. That shot of Jamie, his hairstyle's changed. I don't know if that was shot specially for this episode. They very cleverly gave him the same hairstyle he had when in the Highlanders.
Well, no, that's a clip. But they did for Zoe. They did have to recreate.
Yeah, I know. But there's a couple of shots of him, and it might have been mixed in from Highlanders because obviously Highlanders is a missing story. So, and in the subtitles it says he shouts Brigadoon. It's more Craigatur, which is what he's actually.
Craigatur.
But this is Brigadoon on the actual.
Brigadoon. He blatantly doesn't say.
He doesn't say Brigadoon, does he? I suppose. Why would he go Brigadoon? Why? Anyway, so the Doctor then obviously he's got his sentence to he's exiled to Earth. He doesn't seem entirely happy about it after they did say that he just spent a lot of time there, but he wasn't happy about being stuck there. And then he's shown lots of awful drawings. Why would he be shown drawings and not like?
Well, they were awful, weren't they?
Yeah, they were awful.
Yeah, but he was nevertheless shown drawings. No wonder he said he didn't want anything to do with any of the faces he'd been shown, although one of them did look a little bit like John Pertwee, a thin version. Matters are taken out of his hands. And
as far as I know, this is the only time in the entire 10 stories he says giddy.
He says what?
You're making me giddy.
Oh, okay.
It's one of his last words.
No, his last word was no.
Yeah, but on the way there, he says, "Stop! You're making me giddy. No, you can't do this to me. No."
Yeah, right. Thank you, Debbie. Right, so we've reached the end.
No.
Yes, thank you, Andy.
No.
It's not the bloke. The bloke out of Vicar of Dibley. No. Yes.
No.
You've done that. Will you keep up, please? By the way, Anne-Marie Blackall says lol. And then she probably forgot she said lol because she said lol again.
Lol.
Obviously finding me very amusing. Anyway, moving on. Right, so that's the end of the War Games. Now, this is what I'm going to say about this particular story. It is by far away my favourite Patrick Troughton story. Now, I know we have this thing about things that are longer than four episodes are too long. For me, because it's Patrick Troughton's last story, it needed to be epic, and this was epic. And I didn't bother me about them getting captured and travelling backwards and forwards or whatever. It was totally absorbing, complete fun, wonderful. For me, I suspect if Power of the Daleks came back, I might change my mind. But this is the best Patrick Troughton story. It's a shame it's his last one, but I absolutely adore this story.
Get to see Power of the Daleks.
It's amazing to think that 10 episodes... I could, if I had time, sit and watch this story one after the other, one episode after the other, without getting bored, without falling asleep. It's brilliant.
Yes.
And of course, Terrence Dix had probably something to do with that, because obviously Doctor Who legend and all that. But marvellous, wonderful, all these things that are now sort of, known to Doctor Who fans. The fact he's a Time Lord. Obviously, we don't know about Gallifrey yet, because they just call it the home planet at the moment. But it's so like modern Doctor Who. Absolutely adore it. And if anybody says otherwise, they're wrong, but I think, and Jeff Waddle, sorry, I think, oh, what was it? So anyway, let's move on to the person who's not seen it before. Mrs. Deborah Melrose!
This was amazing. I love this. Absolutely. I was worried because obviously 10 episodes and we've had, you know, stories in the past where they've dragged, but the way you were beautifully, beautifully drip fed new information each episode, it wasn't just a cliffhanger, it was partway through you'd see something and then someone would say something and you were like, hang on a minute, hang on a minute, and it just kept you going, kept you enthralled. And as I said, I don't get emotionally involved much with anything, but
goodness,
by the end of this, I was almost in tears because it was so beautifully written. The goodbye scene was just fantastic. But I did love, I love the way they hopped between time zones. There were like 11 time zones, but they only really concentrated on a few of them because I think then there might have been way too much information about all the different time zones. But I just thought the characters were well-rounded, the villains were superb, the war chief was brilliant, and I can see why people think he's the master, because he oozed the master, you know, mannerisms and things. So it was just, I was sat there going, well, I suppose I could see how. But Patrick Troughton was divine as the Doctor in this, and there was that point right at the end when towards the end, when the Time Lords are talking to them while they stood I think they stood in the TARDIS, and he stood there with his hands on his lapels, like William Hartnell. There's this that moment where he stood like he did, like William Hartnell did, and when he first changed into Patrick Troughton, he stood there sort of defensive with his hands on his lapels. I thought that was brilliantly done. Mm-hmm. Just to sort of, you know, that was just a by the by sort of, if you noticed it, you noticed it type thing. But I just loved it, and I love the whole idea of him being, because I know, obviously, I've seen quite a lot of John Pertwee ones, but, you know, his exiled Earth. It was great to see that, because I've not actually seen that bit. So, you know, I've not seen any of it. So it was, I'm rambling now, but it was just brilliant. It was superb, absolutely brilliant. My favourite one so far in the whole of the journey. And I just... that has to be topped for me. Mm. That's going to have to be, that's a challenge to be topped, because that was perfect.
It is quite good, Deb.
Yeah.
yes. But you talked about the farewell scene. It's just goodbye, Jamie. Goodbye, Jamie.
Simple. It was literally such a simple goodbye compared to, oh my God, David Tennant's not going that one. No, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. He was like, okay, I'm being punished. I've had to give myself up. I've had to save all these people. I've had to sacrifice myself, my freedom, my delight in the galaxy. It's basically what it's about, and it's heart-rending.
It's quite interesting, because look at the... I know, obviously, the departure of Clara is a bit silly.
Who's coming back?
I think so, apparently, yes. But let's move on to future parts of this episode. to news is later, everybody. But it sort of flips the tables a little bit, because it was the Doctor who forgets Clara. And that was quite an interesting flip on it.
Yeah.
Sadly for you, and I liked Clara, sadly for you that you won't forget Clara. She wouldn't be back anyway. But wow, Victoria's a good story. Good series. Maybe moving on. Who should we go for next? Mr. Andrew Nunney. Is he awake? Are you well there? Sorry.
Is he awake?
nobody here called Andrew Nunney.
So get on with it, Andy.
Thank you. The only person who called me Andrew is my late mother. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, I actually didn't think it was that too long, because there's just so much to pack in. You've got so many different strands. So, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I thought that the way the Doctor went in, tried to work out what was going on, realised what was going on, realised his own people, and then was torn between, I've got to save these people, but I can't betray myself. And then realised, well, no, at the end of the day, it's got to be, I've got to give myself up. Try to save Zoe and Jamie, and then realised he couldn't, that he had to give them up as well. Trying to save the people that are like Russell and Carstairs. Don't know what happened to Lady Jennifer. I think presumably she was stuck in 1917. But the way he gave it all up and realised, I've got to go. Still trying to fight at the end. Still trying to argue. Say, you can't do this to me. You can't do this to me. But nope. It wasn't going to happen. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot going on. I thought the way we're introduced to the war, the Time Lords, you start to understand who they are, what they do. And it's interesting that you take it forward or... 4 years to 1973 and how similar they were in The Three Doctors. They kept it going.
They were very godlike, though, weren't they, in this story?
Very what, sorry?
Godlike. They had this sort of these special...
Well, they were. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's it. You understood. The way they saw themselves was as people who ran the universe.
Yeah.
And I think they had a really high opinion of themselves.
Yeah.
It's only a bit later you realise that they suddenly started to realise that they weren't as strong as they thought they were.
It was
but no,
this,
I think it's actually...
Sorry, Andy. It was this point that, you know, that scene between... what are they called? David Tennant's character and the guy playing the headmaster, Anthony Head, in the school. What, I can't even
school
remember.
Reunion.
School reunion.
School reunion. Yeah.
Yeah, the bit when they're walking across the end of the swimming pool, and he's like, "Your people were, you know, indolent, and you know, you're something different." And this was where I finally got to see the first incarnation of them, and the way they were going, "You're coming home now, Doctor." You know, they were just so louche. That, yeah, it did. Sorry to
lose. My God, it's not often found that word used on this, is it?
It's just it's how they sounded and how they acted. It was just like, we're too far gone beyond these people to even think about dealing with it, but we'll deal with it because you made us, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Sorry, carry on, Andy, sorry.
But no, I say I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it's one of the best Troughton stories ever. I thought it's a great way to go out. And I think it's, the way it was obviously done, they didn't know at the time whether there would be a next series or not. Because presumably at the time they filmed it and even broadcast it. Well, presumably they broadcast it, they had appointed first week. But at the time they hadn't recorded it. They hadn't decided who it was going to be. So,
they hadn't decided who it was going to be, but they hadn't decided it was going to be anybody.
What had they? So, no, thoroughly enjoyed it.
So they had decided it was going to continue, did you say?
Yes, they had. Yes, this is all in the info text. Okay. They had decided that it was going to go ahead, but they had not decided on who it was going to be.
Okay. So, moving on. Kirby, what do you think?
I have on the screen in front of me a tweet that I made on May the 12th, 2011.
Oh, that's one of our birthdays.
It says, I finished watching Doctor Who, The War Games, Second Doctor last night. Absolutely superb. Mm. That was the first time I ever saw it. And just, I've watched it, I believe, four or five times now. It is one of the best stories of all time. It is just, it is superb. When I first got the DVDs, I'm going, 10 episodes? You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Value for money, though, eh?
And it just moves right along. I don't care. Some people make fun of the capture-release business. But it's interesting, even though it's capture-release. Mm. It just keeps moving on. And, yes, I agree. The War Chief is the master.
That's it. Thank you, Kirby. Okay, I don't know if we've done this before. If we have, I can't remember it. So, this is the bit that everybody, the viewers, the listeners, look forward to. It's the opinion of Mary Lang.
Oh my! Wait, where's the sound effect? There we go.
Well, for the most part, I agree with everybody. What I find interesting is that, because they had to pitch so many scripts, ran into so many issues, they decided that they had 10 slots to finish out the season, and so they kind of threw that project at the writers. Terrence Dix and Malcolm Hull just write us a 10-part story. So as fast as they were filming, these things were being written. The fact that each episode is so engaging and gives us a little hook that makes us want to come back for the next episode, you know, keeps building, as Deb says, you know, they keep giving us these little pieces of things that we want to know what is the whole picture. So we, for that reason, you know, each episode is very nicely encapsulated in a whole story, but there's a hook to wanting to move on to the next one. So I find that amazing, you know, that they were able to do that. Very well acted, well directed. You know, everything about each episode is really well done. But I think in the speed writing, some things got through that neither the writers, the director, or the actors caught. One of them is a line that the, you know, some of these are just throwaway lines. Doctor says to Jamie when they first arrive, when he says, "Where are we, Doctor?" And he says, "You know, well, this is in the past." And Jamie's like, "Oh, okay, you know." And but he doesn't clarify whose past, because the Doctor, who is multidimensional, I mean, it certainly wouldn't have been his past. And Zoe, who's from the future, you know, not and not from Earth, it would not have been her past. For Jamie, this is his future.
Yes. And some people call me pedantic.
When they said that, my first thought was, well, who's past?
Yes.
And then in another throwaway line, when they land in the Civil War, the Doctor, because when Jamie again, you know, is like a little confused, like, where are we? And the Doctor actually says to him, you know, this is the American Civil War, Jamie, don't you remember? And Frasier looks at him, you know, for a second and then goes, oh, yeah, you know, like, oh, yeah, I do remember. And it's like, well, Jamie never lived the American Civil War. And again, that would have been in his future. So I found that funny. And I think it's partly from this story, the War Games, that we got this idea of the wobbly sets. Because if you remember, in particularly in episode 9, when we're spending all of our time in the central control area, those tables, I mean, they were banging on tables that were wobbling. They were pulling on levers that were, you know, not moving. And they were, and throughout the story, they're controlling everything with these refrigerator magnets. So if ever there's, you know, jokes,
cool.
If ever there's jokes about wobbly sets, as amazing as every other, you know, like set in a time period was, the set for the central control area was extremely flimsy, easily knocked apart. But, you know, those are little minor things that I just wanted to bring up. But yeah, I think we remember him from this story more than we do from previous stories. And he's like everybody's favorite doctor. Well, you know, if we remember the previous stories, he either was so bored with everything, he was being crazy, silly, running around, or he was kind of outside of the action, either gone for entire episodes or just standing around. So there's a lot of stories in which Patrick Troughton didn't do much at all, but he is so effective in this story that I think this is what we mostly remember him from.
One word springs to mind on that last statement of yours, Mary, is sacrilege. Troughton! I've got a T-shirt on, actually, that I've got a few comments. Before I say it, I'm talking about the T-shirt. Ashley Master. Hughes says, nice shirt. Didn't you get me this, Debbie? Somebody got me this T-shirt.
I didn't get you that one.
Didn't you? Somebody got it.
I'm going to step away because my internet has become horrible.
Right.
Sound
fine. Let's start the quiz.
Well, I cannot hear you. I'm hearing you guys as Cher.
Oh, dear. Well, that's beneficial to us.
So let me go and kick whoever's on watching YouTube or whatever off. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, what should we talk about that would really annoy him?
Pedantry.
Oh, yeah, so you liked it then, Mary?
Yeah, overall, I really did like it.
Good. Okay, I suppose we'd better do some feedback. And it sort of goes a bit like this.
Hello, friends of Magmap Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hey.
The War Games by Terence Dix and Malcolm Hogg. This was an enjoyable story, if a little long. The TARDIS crew only visited 3 war zones, so it could have been extended indefinitely. Zoe's wearing a trench coat. How did she know there would be trenches? The TARDIS crew do not march properly while under arrest in episode 1. Philip Madoc is back again.
They penetrated the control area. They just walked in. How? Don't tell him, Pike.
If the Sidrock time machines have a limited life, why do they use them for short-range transport between zones? The Sidrats seem to be controlled by moving around fridge magnets. Why do the aliens wear those masks over their eyes? It does allow the Doctor to use one as a disguise, and it allows the use of the same six extras as security guards, no matter how many get killed. Jamie asks the Doctor if he will open the safe with a tuning fork, a reference to the previous story where they opened a cell door with a tuning fork.
Okay. Tuning fork.
Goodbye, Second Doctor. Goodbye, Zoe. Goodbye, Jamie McCrimmon of Clan Machismo. I don't know why they thought Jamie was in Highland Regiment, just because of his kilt. He might have been a Scottish shepherd.
Oh, dear.
Perhaps a shepherd spy.
Oh. <Definitely. laughs>
Come on, Deb, admit it, you loved that.
Oh, who went?
Kirby's gone. Oh, hang on, he's what's he doing? He's just trying to Skype me on my mobile. He's ruining the Facebook link. Hang on, where are we? What's he doing?
Just
what's going on? Is everyone still there?
Yeah, we're here.
Still here, yeah.
Facebook for you to sort Kirby out. Your Facebook thing has frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Kirby's fault.
Give him a call, Adam.
I can't. Silly Kirby. Oh, stop it. He's trying to phone me. Oh, now it's Andy Nonny.
He's trying to phone.
Right. He's thrown the call out. For goodness sake. Something funny going on here. Right. What on earth have they done to my Skype call? Right. Hopefully this will reconnect everyone.
Hi, folks. I'm around there, but I said he got cut off as well.
I got cut off too.
It's Kirby trying to call in. It threw the whole call out.
Oh, right.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, Well, not only did it throw the whole call out, it also threw out the video, because unfortunately my phone has also Skype on it.
What,
so
what are you talking about?
You were phoning his. You were Skyping his mobile.
No, I was just trying to join the. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. But when you did that, it dialed through on every one of my my devices.
Well, how am I supposed to know that?
So what I would suggest not doing that and just maybe sending me some sort of message saying, can you re-add me to the call? Because
you mean what I just did?
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I mean, sent you a message to add me to the call.
Yeah, but you threw the whole Skype call out, therefore ending the podcast for about 30 seconds while I was trying to figure out what the minute was going on. Not only did it end the podcast for 30 seconds, it also completely scrambled the Facebook link as well. So just a little note for future reference. Don't do that again.
Slap on the wrist.
Don't do that again.
Ow!
Right. We were trying to continue with feedback, and if anybody can still see us, please post a message on the Facebook video thing, because I can see it running, but then it's my phone and mine's the hub of the whole thing. So if you can still see us running on Facebook, please, or me, please send some sort of message, please.
Skype must have changed things, because I have rejoined before using that method.
Skype has changed things, and they keep changing it. Please try not to dial back in to Skype calls, because unfortunately, all I've got...
Affirmative, master.
So my iPad in the other room was ringing. My phone in here was ringing, and my other iPad, because I've got a new
iPad.
You
shouldn't have them all running Skype.
They're not running Skype. Skype runs in the background. That's how it works, isn't it? If we get a Skype call, it will open up Skype
How you deal with it. I don't
on mobile devices. Right then, I've got some messages come through. Amory Blackall says, still here. Alan T. Butcher says, nice shirt. And Terry Miles says, all okay this end. So thanks,
yay,
everybody.
Glad his end's okay.
Oh, well, we were trying to do feedback, weren't we?
How about the rest of him?
Right. All hail Alan T. Butcher, because the naughty Debbie Melrose, who was just being very cheeky then, is just about to get the text that you've sent me, Mr. Alan T. Butcher. She's gone all quiet now, hasn't she?
My Facebook Messenger is cleaning. Hang on.
She's trying to get out of it. But you won't, because I've just sent it.
No, it seriously is. I'm not kidding.
I've just sent it to you. Sorry. All right. Have you got it?
No.
Would you prefer I sent it to you on your Kindle? Because it's very long.
It's coming through now. Hang on a minute.
Oh, apparently
it's about to break through between the time zones.
The video feed is now a conversation starter because there's 25 comments on it. And Ian Kirk says, I saw no interruption. Thank you, Ian. No. What I would have seen is my finger coming up to the screen like
Master?
This. What?
Master?
What?
Did I miss Ian's feedback?
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Get in!
Don't tell him, Pike.
Don't give it away, Debbie. Is there a force Kirby into listening to the podcast for a change?
I'd love to.
What?
I didn't give anything away.
You did? That was a subtle hint to what Ian said.
He didn't know that. He just thought I was quoting from Dad's Army. Now you've ruined it.
How should I know anything about Dad's Army?
See? Oh, shut up. Get on with it.
And besides, I read his comments already.
Oh, very good. Yeah, right. Debbie, stop trying to worm your way out of reading this.
I just started it. The fight for Mexico is how it starts.
Come on,
then. I randomly say it.
Yes, you did.
Arturo Villa versus Salamander. Near 20 megabytes. The War Games is, of course, a closely studied exercise in applicability, rehearsing basic political machinations through a militaristic prism. It opens a scenario with a multifaceted ground-level layer of activity building a power base within a diverse socio-historical and geographical zones, along with a higher level of governance seeking to exploit that power base for its own wider ambitions. So it is necessary to see our heroes move from one area to area and back again to clearly exhibit the varied ways in which such political frameworks deal with matters. To have limited this activity over less episodes would have truncated the scope of the story to its detriment.
Take a breath now.
The detail of all this could clearly form the thesis of a PhD. Within that higher level of governance, there are further highly applicable intrigues within the triumvirate of the war chief, the security chief, and the warlord. Distrust, suspicion, deference, hidden agendas, and surveillance and playing off your rivals, one against the other, are all portrayed. Eventually, of course, we have the Doctor's self-sacrifice. He has promised to get everyone home, but can only do so by giving all his position away. The war chief, duplicitous and self-serving, cannot even comprehend the Doctor's choice, a stark contrast of political motivations. Now we come to episode 10, an episode so significant that it rivals episode 2 of The Space Pirates in importance and cannot be missed. The Doctor has done the right thing, but it was illegal, so he pays the price, another harsh reality of some political activity. We also learn that most wars took place in Sussex, and Lemuel Gulliver went on in later life to develop a successful legal career in Casterbury as Premier Chambers and Gaffney. Also, General Smythe became a cat priest on Red Dwarf, honestly and literally wrote that 30 seconds before Debbie said it on the live feed. Also, War Games, humescent epic, the like of which has not been seen elsewhere in Doctor Who, even the Daleks' master plan pales in comparison. Both its length and its width are exemplary. The cliffhangers are some of the best the series ever saw. Uh-huh. The novel is a perfect example of a story being bigger than the page count. Another one I vividly remember reading for the first time and blowing my mind. Actually, this is my favourite story of all time. Touching departure 2, a team ripped apart too soon. Next up, Dr. Quatermass, the sci-fi hardened in colour. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan. Which is very sad because I think Fraser Hounds was asked to stay on. It's a shame he didn't. There you go. Yeah, yes, sorry, Debbie. Was. You're going to say.
He was.
Him with Pertwee would have been interesting.
It would.
But then maybe they would not have gotten Pertwee.
No, I don't know. But either way, it's a shame.
It would have been a dynamic, couldn't it? Definitely.
It would have nice to have had something to link.
TARDIS, you know.
Black and white Doctor Who to the colour Doctor Who. Although eventually we did get that link when Troughton came back from the Three Doctors. Mm. So, yes, that was very, very good. Now it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
I won't.
Yes, you will.
No.
That's the first time in a very long time that no one's actually properly interrupted my introduction to the quiz.
Oh, sorry, should I?
Bell. Where's my bell gone? Hang on.
Ding.
Ding.
The bell. Hang on, what's this down here?
Oh,
look what I found.
You can ring my bell.
Of course, you won't be needing it much.
Ring my bell. My bell. Ring my bell.
Right, Mr. Happy used to sit underneath
it. Ring Michelle. My bell.
Be quiet. Mr. Happy used to sit underneath this bell.
Take your pardon.
This bell here. Mr. Happy used to sit underneath it. So it was when I dinged it, he used to ding properly.
Mr. Happy sits under the bell.
Mr. Happy disappeared, but I've since found him upstairs, wedged between two of our chests of drawers. Don't quite know why. Right. Debbie, who do you think is going to be...
The images that are Kirby. My head.
No. Kirby.
What? Yeah, Master.
Be quiet. Debbie, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz?
I think you.
Okay. Andy, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz?
You.
Okay. Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz?
Debbie.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz?
Debbie.
And I'm going to go for Kirby. Simple reason, he's watched it enough times.
Whatever.
Right, so question one goes to Debbie. Remember, you've got jokers, etc., etc. I'm going to read the question in my head first because I want to know whether I can play my joker under certain circumstances. Okay, I'm not going to play on this one because it's Debbie's question. What time were they due to go over the top?
Joker.
Ooh.
0400.
0400 hours,
actually. That'll do, thank you, Mr. Pedantic.
0400, I forgot.
That'll do. Mr. Pedantic.
Yes, right.
You're
doing Andy.
Extreme pedantry this week.
Okay, Andy, yeah. Shut up. Andy, this is your question. What was Jennifer's surname?
Buckingham.
It's a shame.
Joker, bollocks.
Every single week. Oh, dear, right. Mary.
Yes.
What did Jamie call Barrington? You won't get this one. I'm not going to play with Jamie, just in case someone else
and
will.
And I won't. I'll pass on that one.
Okay, hang on. I've got to play the sound effect. All right, sorry. So that's the point to me. Who said I know? Wasn't it Debbie?
Me, I think. Was it? Did call him a daft Sassenach? Tom calls me that all the time.
Don't blame him. Right. Kirby.
Master.
Who was in charge of the firing squad?
Ooh.
I know.
Ooh. Ransom.
Oh, they're in the end.
Bollocks.
Right, Debbie.
Long time. You said Joker.
I've got this thing written on my computer. It says Joker, and I forgot it.
Debbie.
Yes.
What year did the redcoat think it was?
I know.
He thought it was 1745.
Nearly said it wrong, didn't you?
Nearly did, yeah.
Andy.
My own writing.
Okay, yeah.
What did the doctor say when asked for his identification papers? Hang on, I'm going to play my joker on that one.
It's something like, how dare you?
Oh!
Well,
I wasn't sure, that's why I didn't play my joker. I wasn't sure about that one.
Curses.
Very good.
Right, Mary.
Yes.
What was Jennifer driving through when the mist descended? This is the first mist, obviously.
Sector 4.
I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
A forest.
That's a song by The Cure. Da-ding. Oh, never mind.
Oh.
It was right, but when he said a forest, okay, that is the...
It went over Kirby's head.
It's a song by The Cure. Da-ding. It's a brilliant song, a forest by The Cure, isn't it, Andy?
Yes.
Thank you.
I remember it.
I might have to dub it in later, if I can find time.
That completely went over my head. I have no idea.
Google it. A forest by The Cure.
If I wanted to Google it, I wouldn't be able to be heard by you guys.
All right. Maybe after the show, then.
If I remember.
Whose question was that for originally?
That was mine.
Okay, right then. So this is Kirby's question.
Master.
How many shovels did they lose in the last push?
I know.
Joker. Ooh. Joker.
Yeah.
Joker.
You only get one.
Over 100.
Ooh. Very good.
Right, score update then. In last place with no points, it's Mary. In fourth place with 2 points, it's me. In third place with 6 points, it's Andy. And in joint first place with 7 points each, it's Debbie and Kirby. Next question goes to Debbie.
Yes.
Oh no. Next question goes to Andy.
That should be Andy or Mai's question.
All right, I'll give you everybody else. If anybody can guess what the next question was, I'll give them 2 points. Oh, and then I'll give the question to Debbie. So what do you reckon the reason why I went, oh, no, and I dinged Debbie out of being correct? What do you reckon the question was? You're looking very quiet.
I have no idea, but it's probably...
Something you've given the answer to or something like that, isn't it?
Because no. Debbie gets a lot of the easy questions.
Well, this is a particularly easy one.
You've got the hard ones, don't you, Mary?
Okay, nobody gets the extra 2 points I was giving out for the sake of it, but this is a question that Debbie's going to get a ding on. What did Jamie... Shut up! What did Jamie suggest the doctor crack the safe with?
Tuning fork.
I've already given you a ding, you're not getting another one.
I loved that line, that was so funny.
All right, Andy.
Yep.
What was in the grenade?
What did he explode of some kind?
Oh, I know.
It's explosive with a 4 second fuse, so it would be. It's going to have a jelly knife or dynamite. I will go with.
Both were wrong, so I get a point for that one. Okay. Go on then, Kirby.
I'm Amatol.
Yay!
Mary.
Yes.
When Carstairs was caught, what was his planned fate?
What was his what?
The fate they had planned for him. When Carstairs was caught, what was it?
Oh, I don't remember.
Excellent. Anybody?
No.
Ooh.
Court martial?
Yep. Oh. See, I always get the hard ones.
Yeah, you do.
Was it court martial?
No, it wasn't. No. It was reprocessing.
Oh, okay.
Right, Kirby.
Oh. We're trying to work out which court.
Kirby.
Master.
What is the failure rate for reprocessing?
I know.
5%.
Debbie.
Yes.
What did Carstairs say the training room was full of?
I think I know.
His brother soldiers.
I know.
Hang on, sorry. What did you say, Debbie?
Is it his brother soldiers?
Nope. Who said
I know? I know.
Go on, Andy, yes.
I think it's my fellow officers.
No.
Good, 2 points to me. You don't get any points for this, Kirby, but what was the answer?
Guards.
Good lord. I give myself an extra point for you lot being so rubbish. The answer was scientific mumbo jumbo.
Fuck, you have got that written down here as well.
Oh, my.
Mary. Hang on, was that Mary's? Was that your? Who had the question to start off with? I've lost a plot now.
Hey.
Was it you? No, for it's Andy's question next.
Okay.
What was the security? I'll start again. What was the security chief's first question for Zoe?
What time period did you come from?
Nope. Anybody?
Nope.
Oh, giving up very easy.
How did you get here?
Nope. The question was, what is your name?
Oh.
Mary.
Yes.
Her name wasn't Mary.
I nearly said that.
Yeah. All right, Mary. Shut up, Mary.
Yes?
What would the war chief do to the security chief if he didn't find proof of his alleged corruption? You won't get this one. But
no,
never mind.
I don't know. I didn't get that one.
Anybody? I was on form when I was writing these questions. I'm really pleased with myself.
Why do I always get these?
Anybody? Oh, it's all time's running out. Right, another point for me. No, crush him.
Okay.
Crush him. Right. Kirby.
Master.
What was the name of the character played by Patrick Troughton's son?
Oh, what was the name of the
That's
character?
That's what I'm asking you.
I know.
Yay. Sake. You looked that up, didn't you?
No.
Right, score update. In last place with no points, it's Mary. Aww. In fourth place with 6 points, it's Andy. In third place with 9 points, it's Debbie. In second place with 11 points, it's me. And the lead with 12 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Debbie.
Hello.
What was Moore's number?
Ooh, I did write that down.
Well, that would be useful.
Number.
Private Moore 1871.
Say that again.
Private Moore 1871.
Wrote it down wrong, obviously. Anybody?
Oh, no. Oh, bloody hell. 00239.
Right, point deducted.
You know, I've got 1871 written down here as well.
Point deducted for you, Debbie.
And, yeah, I know.
And a point
That's
for me.
That's the year that he was in.
Yes, I know. I've got two numbers
point for me.
Right.
Andy.
Yep.
How long did the doctor have before being crushed to death?
Joker, 30 seconds.
That's a long time.
See, that's how you play your Joker, Andy. Although you could have played it on a couple of previous occasions. Mary.
Yeah, you could have.
Well, I play you now, I've got 2 points, so what do I care?
4 points, mate, not 2 points.
4 points even, yeah.
Mary.
Yes.
How did the doctor describe Smythe's nature? You probably won't get this one, but it's quite a good question, nevertheless. How did the doctor describe Smythe's nature?
Don't know.
Anybody?
Nope.
Excellent. Malicious is the answer. Kirby.
Master.
Who shot Smythe?
I don't remember.
You're going very well for me. Anybody? Oh, pardon?
See, no one else remembers either.
Go on then,
Andy.
Was it Moore?
Was it Carstairs?
No, it was Russell. Mm. Right, who had that question originally? I've lost where I was with this.
Me. Right,
so therefore,
me.
It's Debbie's question.
Yes.
What rank is Russell? God.
Oh, God.
I think I know,
but I could be wrong.
Captain. Well, we could all be wrong.
Hang on. Sorry, what was the answer, Debbie?
Captain.
Go on then, Kirby.
No, that's what I was going to say. Captain.
Anybody?
I think it was Sergeant Major.
Ooh, you're so close. Not enough of that. It was Sergeant.
Okay.
He had 3 stripes on his arm. I thought that was a big clue. Right,
you're starting to make 3 shots.
How am I supposed to know that?
We'll pay attention.
I thought someone called him Captain at one point as well.
Well, it was wrong. Capitaine. He called everybody Capitaine, didn't he? Be quiet. Who's next?
I don't know the various rank things, so how would I know 3 stripes means that?
Because you're an Anglophile. Who's next? Sorry, who was that question originally for?
Me.
Right, so next question goes to Andy.
Mm-hmm.
What did Jamie throw out of the window during the siege?
Grenade.
Yay.
Somebody got a right answer.
Oh, God. Sorry, Mary.
Here it comes again, yes.
That's what she said. right, here we go. After the doctor was abducted from the chateau, what did he say on his arrival? As he arrived back in the sort of base where the warlord met.
Yeah.
What did he say when he arrived back in that strange studio with all the silvery sets?
I think I've got the right answer to this one.
I don't remember.
Good. Debbie?
I'm not sure if this is the right one. I think he comes out and says, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you. Yay!
We'll get one of your deducted points reinstated.
Thank you.
All right, Kirby.
Master.
What is important about Arturo Villa?
Ow.
Ooh, I know.
Was important?
Yeah, what is important about Arturo Villa?
I know.
Oh, okay, yeah. He's got one of the largest groups of the resistance people.
That'll do.
Yep.
Bing.
Right, score update. In last place score with update. No points, it's Mary. Yay. In fourth place with 9 points, it's Debbie. In third place with 12 Wait. Points, it's Andy. In second place with 14 points, it's Kirby. And then the lead with 20 points, it's me. Next question goes to Debbie.
I need to start missing some so Debbie can get to the top.
Debbie.
Yes.
Why did they choose Earth? This is in relation to the script, so you have to get it fairly close.
Man is the most vicious species of all.
You can get more spot on than that. Word for word correct. In fact, I was going to give you an extra point, but it's you. I would have done that for someone else.
She recorded that on her cube.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at it right now.
Andy?
Me?
What? Oh, I've done that one. What did VS say a woman should never do? And he's quite correct.
It's something like, flipping heck. It's something like speak in the company of men or speaking as a spoken to.
No, nope. Anybody? Yeah.
That's what I thought it was.
Well, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. A woman should never... Oh, never mind. I'll get that point as well.
Never. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Think is the answer.
Speak.
Think. Yes. Mary.
Yes.
What are Jamie's initials?
What?
Oh, God, yes. He does give his full name, doesn't he?
J-R-M.
Pardon?
J-R-M. Oh, I get a point.
Could have had 4 points if you played your joker. Kirby.
Master.
Who stayed behind in the barn? You won't get this one.
I'm not going to get that one.
No, you're not. I knew you wouldn't, so I'm going to give myself a point for that. Anybody?
What was it again? Sorry.
Who stayed behind in the barn?
Petrov.
My God! Curses. I hate it when people get the answers. Hang on. Was that your question, Debbie?
No.
That was my question.
All right, okay. So this is your question then, Debbie.
Okay.
What type of broadcast did the security chief want?
Blanket.
Thank you.
Andy.
It's a nice warm broadcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Andy, shut up. What did the doctor ask Jamie to tell him? Help. Oh, start that. We'll start again. What did the doctor ask Jamie to help him with? Obviously, this is when they're sort of going towards the TARDIS, you know, and that sort of slow motion stuff.
Slow motion thing.
Yeah, so what did the doctor ask Jamie to help him
with? He's trying to help him get the key into the lock.
Yep.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Are you ready for this? Why Probably. Did the doctor run away? As in from his home planet. Why did the doctor run away?
I remember you talking about that.
I know.
Yes, we know, Kirby.
Give it to Kirby.
That's a shame.
I know.
Yeah, well, I said I know first.
Go on then, Kirby.
He was bored.
So, next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Where is the War Chief's home planet?
Oh, that's right. Oh. It's got a Galactic Sector 973.
Did you mean Warlord though there? Because that was a bit confusing then. You said War Chief.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's right.
It's security. Yeah,
chief. It's very, shut up, Debbie. Yeah, that's exactly. Kirby's job
the
to
same
do that.
Place.
No, he's right. He knows what I meant, and that is the answer I've got written down.
Yeah,
so whether
that's
I wrote
what counts.
Chief
that's
or
counts.
Lord, that's the correct answer, isn't it, Andy?
They're from the same planet anyway.
Andy should have said yes. He would have got himself a point. Right, so where are we now? Right, we've got two questions left. So it's free for all. Remember, of course, Mary has still yet to play a joker, points of which will go to me if she doesn't over the next two questions. Next question is this one. What was the first evil shown on the scanner? Yes?
I know.
Quarks.
Yeah, well done.
Last question that Mary needs to get right or play her joker on, otherwise 4 points to me.
Why don't you just give it to... Why don't you ask her this one directly so that she has a chance?
Because that's not how we play the game, and Debbie's too competitive. Right. Right, everybody. Last question. Who played the first Time Lord? As in this, you know, the words go at the end. He's called the first Time Lord. Go on then, Debbie.
Bernard Horsfall.
Gulliver.
So,
I wasn't going to play that.
Of course, Mary didn't play a joker, so therefore those points go to me.
No!
Yes, I'm sorry, that's the way
that
it works.
Was very good, that was a share, no. No!
Yeah, it was. Okay, well, I'm just doing some mathematics at the moment. Not my best subject, it's got to be said. Okay, so the current scores before we... finalise. In last place with 2 points is Mary. In joint third place with 17 points each, it's Kirby and Andy. In second place with 16 points, it's Debbie. And in the lead with 27 points, it's me. Right. Debbie predicted me. Andy predicted me. Mary predicted Debbie. Debbie predicted Kirby. No, sorry, Kirby. Kirby predicted Debbie. Beg your pardon.
Yeah.
And I predicted
Kirby. Mutual Admiration Society going on. Yeah.
So the final scores are thus. In last place with 2 points, it's Mary.
Yay!
In fourth place with 27 points, it's me. Hang on, I missed one more. In fourth place with 17 points, it's Kirby. Beg your pardon. Then third place with 27 points, it's me. In second place with 32 points, it's Debbie. And the winner this week with 34 points is Andy.
Yay!
Yay! And you wanted to quit before the top of the hour.
Interesting thing, of course, there is if Debbie hadn't had a point deducted for uttering an answer she shouldn't have uttered when it was someone else's question, the points would have been shared. But they would have been. So, yes, well done, Andy. Never thought that happened. I think Andy winning the quiz deserves one of these.
That's made my day. Thank you.
Thank
you.
So when's the last time that happened,
Oh, no, you see, you now get it. The next story, that's the first one I remember watching live. So I can remember the first Pertwee story because I'm that old.
Yes.
And Pertwee is my doctor. Good. So, yeah, good. You never know.
Indeed. But Alan T. Butcher says, prevention is the better, sorry, is better than cure. Oh, the cure. Prevention is better than the cure. That's a Forrest reference. Oh, dear me. Sorry about that. Oh, he's off, Cher.
Thank
again.
You, Cher.
You believe in life after love. You're a big family. Hang on, I typed in the wrong thing. You don't think. You should learn how to play that tune on the recorder, Debbie.
What?
Believe. Do you know Believe? That song is the biggest selling single of 1999, was it? I can't remember that. Whatever time it came out, it was the biggest selling single that year. It was.
It was definitely entering her really frightening looking
And she's the oldest artist to get a number one single.
You should be able to hear me now.
Well, yeah, but it's still a bit. But it can, I can hear you, but it's not. Anyway, Doctor Who news.
Right. I was bringing up the Doctor Who news page, didn't it?
Well, don't bring up the Doctor Who news page because I've got it up here and I'm using a Macintosh and it doesn't seem to have a problem, funny enough.
Nothing to do with.
Right, moving on. Yes. Class. Now, I was sort of thinking, oh, shall I watch it? But the Doctor's going to be in it. Now I have to watch it. Because essentially it becomes Doctor Who if the Doctor is in it. So, yes, they have admitted that Peter Capaldi will appear in the forthcoming series of Class, which debuts on the 23rd of September. Eh? Does that mean I've missed it? I've missed it.
It's 22nd of October.
It says 23rd of September, 4:30 BST.
No, it's Saturday, 22nd of October.
It says here, the cast of Class will be appearing at a live stream later today. Beg your pardon?
No, the first broadcast on BBC Three is the 22nd of October.
The trouble is, if it's on BBC Three, it's not being broadcast, is it? Because it's a blimmin' online channel. So it does rather surprise me that it's not going to be on CBBC. It probably will be.
I'm not watching it. It's supposed to be a bit too racy. Kids are not supposed to watch it, was an announcement made a couple of days ago. It's a bit too racy for little kids.
Yeah, the first episode of the young adult series will feature the current Doctor, Peter Capaldi. So, yes, we have to watch it. Therefore, we will... Pardon?
I'm not going to watch it.
Everybody, should we watch the first episode of Class? Because
Peter Capaldi... Yes!
Thank you. Outvoted. Because it's going to be reviewed. If we can somehow watch out.
Surely.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. So you have to watch it.
Why do we have to watch it and talk about it?
It doesn't really appeal. I'm sorry.
It doesn't really appeal to me. But I'm going to watch it because it's a Doctor Who spin-off. And it's Peter Capaldi. And it might be good. You never know.
Probably. Master and Capaldi. The rest of you.
Pardon?
Master and I can talk about
it. I think he start a side podcast for you two to talk about it.
No.
I'll talk about it. I'll watch it.
We've talked over the last several years about lots of Doctor Who related things that aren't necessarily Doctor Who. Torchwood. I've had to sit through that last series of Torchwood and we had to review every episode. So horrible. I'm sorry, we will be talking about Class.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about Class. I'm sorry, it's just our job.
In those days, we were trying to find good things to talk about that series.
We did find some good things about it. Not a lot, but...
it was dire.
It was beneficial to have Ben on the show at the time. Right.
Does my sound any better?
No. Right. Yeah. Where do we get up to? I was trying to talk about... So, yeah, Class is going to be on very soon. At least it's something Doctor Who's watched between now and Christmas, isn't it? Terence Baylor has passed away at the age of 86. He appeared in two Doctor Who stories. 1966, he played Yendom, one of Monoid slaves. And we wouldn't have seen what he looked like, would you, in the first Doctor story, The Ark. And he played Major Barrington, rather topically, in The War Games. Yeah, Major Barrington was the one with the tash that I said looked a bit like Blackadder.
Oh. That's what it said in the script. They actually called him Blackadder in the script thing on the internet.
Indeed. And Canada are going to show Class as well. I doubt we've got any listeners or viewers in Canada. Doctor Who auction. Number of props and costumes from Doctor Who are being sold as part of the Prop Store Entertainment Memorabilia Live auction taking place on the 27th of September. Been and gone. So, missed out on that one. See, we haven't been around for a while. We missed all these little things. DWAS Polarity Day. Doctor Who Appreciation Society announced details of their forthcoming special event dedicated to the Doctor, John Pertwee, taking place on the 23rd of October 2016 between 1 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. Polarity Day will celebrate his time as a Doctor, of which we're going to be doing as of episode 322. So, there you go. Isn't that interesting? No? Well, I thought it was. Yes, we're moving into the colour era of Doctor Who. Isn't it weird?
When are we recording next?
Well, I don't know. Probably a couple of weeks' time, I would imagine.
No, we've already set.
Yeah, we've already earmarked a date, haven't we, Kirby?
Oh, did we?
Yes,
the
16th.
The
16th.
Okay.
Something like that, yeah. And then there's a load of books and stuff like that. So, that's it for news to a certain degree. Yes, hang on. I'm going to move on to the dimensions. Yeah, go on.
Well, actually, I can ask this question when we talk about what we're... I guess we are talking about what we're watching next and reviewing.
We are indeed going to be reviewing Spearhead from Space. And I've got to try and dig out my Blu-ray.
Okay, I don't have it on Blu-ray. I have the original one. I've got the special edition.
Is it not the same, apart from the Blu-rays in HD?
What did you have?
I don't know if it's the same on Blu-ray because I don't have the Blu-ray.
I've lost my Blu-ray. I might have to watch it on DVD.
The special edition is different.
Okay. Well,
Debbie and I are going to be turning to sources unnamed.
Yes.
Yes. Tomato sauce?
So we'll take what we get.
Why don't you cut through between the buildings and let her bark?
Because as I've just said, oh, for God's sake, I don't know where my Blu-ray is. If I can find my Blu-ray, I'll lend Debbie the DVD.
I don't want a Blu-ray if you're going to lend me that, because my PS3 makes the most god-awful.
What have I just said? I said I'll watch the Blu-ray if I can find my Blu-ray, and that therefore frees up my DVD, which I will lend to you.
But is it the original DVD or is it the special edition?
I don't
DVD?
Bloody know. I've probably got both.
Hey, so stop bickering. Climb down. John GT have just announced a guest announcement. I've been waiting for them to make it. And
well, I knew who it was already, so there.
Collins Hall is going to be at Con GT in 2017.
Yay. I saw that Peter Davison is going to be at Con Cerberus, I believe. Is that right?
Hey.
Yeah, I've known for a couple of weeks that we were trying to get Colin Spall.
That's really good, but...
I know now you've confirmed, now Edward Owen has confirmed it, so it's...
Yes. Is anyone going to creep up to Matthew so we can try and get Peter Davison on the show?
I'm going to have to slap that boy around if he doesn't get Peter Davison.
Yeah, someone we haven't had on the show would be quite good to actually get him on these 5 minutes.
Matthew has disappointed me 2 years in a row now.
Oh, Matthew.
By not bringing me guests.
Yes. But he does that deliberately just to wind you up.
He cannot tell those guests what to do that they have already signed agreements for.
I'm off the bed. I'll see you all in a fortnight's time. Okay?
Oh, you didn't get to hear about my talking about dimensions.
I'll listen to it back later.
Oh, thank you. Does that mean
I'm going to be at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, so I want to go to bed. Okay.
Does that mean you're going to listen to the show? Excellent.
I always listen to the show. Oh, honestly.
Oh my goodness! Thank you. Just missed. Reese Parton's just joined the thread. Hello, Reese. Reese is listening. Why can't he be on the show? Reese, can you come on? Get your Skype up and running. Come on the show, and just listen to me. We want to hear Reese, don't we, everybody?
Yes.
Reese, make yourself available on Skype. Yeah.
Mary.
Yes?
What?
You talking about Matthew isn't always able to get the people. When I'm working with Eddie for Con GT, I make sure that we're getting the people.
He's not in control of that. He's not the one who makes those contracts.
Right. You should go and talk to Bonnie.
Barney, yeah.
Yeah.
Should I talk to Barney? I'll talk to Barney. Or even Bonnie. As we would say in
Bonnie the Zygon.
Anyway, come on, Reese, get Skyped up. We want to speak to Reese, don't we?
Come on,
yeah. Anyway, right. So while Reese decides to work out how to use a new version of Skype, because it's a bit weird, I'm going to talk about where I am next week.
Something special happening next week? Yeah. Really?
Shut up. I'm going to be going up to Newcastle. I've got to fly up there, so I'm not happy about that. In an old aeroplane with propellers and stuff. So I'm worrying this could be the last podcast because I'll probably end up crashing or something.
You won't.
I hope not, because I don't like flying. Well, I do like flying, but I don't like the possibility of crashing. Because if you crash in a car and you're dead in the car, it's very like that, isn't it? In a plane, you've got a couple of minutes before the thing hits the deck that you've got to contemplate. That's a scary thing, I think. So...
You want a bit more mind that bus, what bus, splat type thing, don't you?
Pardon?
That's how you want to go, then, if you want to go in an accident.
It's got to be quick. I don't want to be in a, you know it's going to, you've got a few minutes to think about the thing crashing and stuff like that. But anyway, moving on. Hopefully that won't happen. Obviously, if it does, there won't be another 20 megabyte podcast.
Why are you flying? The country's so small, you can drive easily.
I'm flying because, although it's probably a 300-mile drive... Unfortunately, the M1 motorway and the A1M are the worst motorways in the country, and when we last drove up there, it took 7 hours. Don't want to be doing that. I'd rather take 1 hour and 15 minutes in the plane.
It's rather renowned, Kirby.
Okay.
So what would you rather do, Kirby?
7 hours is nothing.
It would actually cost me about £90 to do the return flight, which is a similar amount of money it would actually cost to drive up there, park, etc., etc.
And take the ferry. I'll take the ferry over as well.
I still have to take the ferry to get to the airport.
The ferry comes in anyway. I've got the ferry to the Southampton, and then the train to the airport from Southampton railway station. That's not going to cost a lot, £20. But all in all, I would have had to done that if I was going to drive anyway, and it would have been £30-40 to drive, including the ferry, where it's about £20 on foot or whatever. So all in all, it's cheaper to fly, about a third. No, it's less than a third, isn't it, Deb? But it was about less than a quarter of the time. So, you know, I can go late, I can arrive there, I can spend time with my family. And then on the way back, I can leave the convention at 6 p.m. and I can be back on the island by probably about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the evening.
I suppose.
So, anyway, Dimensions, the convention I'm talking about. It's at the Cap Horn Hotel. Was it the Cop Horn Hotel? What's it called again? In Newcastle.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to have to duck out. No, I'm sorry. Isla's not very well.
Bless her. Anyone else?
And I have to go in about 5 minutes.
Have a great time.
This is unbelievable. Anyone else got any children or anything and wants to go to bed? Just so I'm talking about the thing I've been saving up.
It's only 5:22 in the afternoon.
Reese Parton hasn't.
And I have to be out of here. I have to be off in about five minutes.
Excuse me. Got to get up early tomorrow morning. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says it's Buddy Holly all over again.
My neighbor makes dinner for me on Sundays, and I think it's rude for me to show up late.
Anyway, well, I'm going to carry on talking about this convention, or try to.
And I'm still here.
Thank you, Kevin. Right, anyway, yes, it's the Cophorn Hotel, I believe, in Newcastle. It starts on Friday, and the Friday lineup is Sharon Deuce, who's going to be from 2 to 5pm on the Friday, and then again from 9 to 1 on
Who
the
is
Saturday.
That?
I'm not quite sure. Shall I Google her?
Sure.
Because I recognise the face.
You don't want me to do it.
No, my computer my computer does it without any major problems. All right, let's see who she is. I'm pretty sure she's been in Doctor Who.
What's the name of this convention again?
It's called Dimensions. Yeah, Sharon Deuce is a British actor. Her biggest role was alongside Ray Brooks in the BBC comedy drama series Big Deal. Let's have a look on the Wikipedia. Right, she was in Doctor Who Ghostlight, where she played... Where is it? She's been in a... What? No, I clicked on the wrong thing. I clicked on Ghostlight and it came up with a whole thing about Doctor Who. Yeah, she's been in Ghostlight. <laughs> <laughs> Played a character in Ghostlight, so might have to look up the cast of Ghostlight. And then you'll find... Anyway, yeah, so it's funny how you just have made the one appearance in Doctor Who and you end up appearing at conventions left, right and centre. Anyway, yeah, so she's on the Friday along with Laurie Good. Anybody know who Laurie Good is?
Nope.
Okay, I'll have a look. See who Laurie Good is. It's supposed to be like a drinks reception on the Friday because I've got a gold ticket. It's extremely expensive. I just typed it. Because I typed goods instead of good. That's right, Laurie Good. Right, who is this Laurie Good? He is an actor who I don't recognise.
So is there going to be anyone there that you do recognise?
He says, Laurie Good was born in Windsor, blah, 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 blah. Say what you've been in then. Trouser Bar, Carrie's War. Dinosaur Hunters, Lost World, Messiah, Randall and Hopkirk, Deceased, D.L. and Pascoe, 11 Men Against 11, whatever, Pride and Prejudice, Doctor Who. Oh, he's been in a few Doctor Who's. Battlefield, Enlightenment, Warrior's Gate, State of Decay, EastEnders, played a table tennis player. There's been loads of things, actually. Star Wars as well. There you go. but I don't recognise him. But nevertheless, he's going to be at Dimensions. He's got a picture of him that might... No, there's no pictures of him. Anyway, so that's the Friday. Obviously not a lot going on the Friday. Saturday, however, Sylvester McCoy, Fraser Hines, David John, Patricia Quinn. I don't know who that is.
Ooh. Wait, well, no, you don't know who Patricia Quinn is? No,
go on, who's Patricia Quinn?
Have you never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes, I have seen the Rocky Horror
Picture Show. Magenta. But she was also in the first episode with Ace. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I've gone blank.
Yeah, don't worry. That's fine. Thank you. Colin Baker. Derek Martin, I'm looking forward to meeting Derek Martin because one of his lines is a line I use quite a lot as a fake threat. I'll set the dog on to you. I use that quite a lot. That's one of his lines from
Image of the Fae Dawn. You haven't used that in a while.
I haven't said it for a while because dogs are not, well, I think one of them is in here. But that's Derek Martin who played the sort of guard in Image of the Fendal. He's been in a few other Doctor Who's as well. He played a lot of unit soldiers that didn't have any lines and stuff like that, because he was like the stunt man, I think. So looking forward to meeting him. Matthew Waterhouse, apparently is a very nice chap, so I'm quite looking forward to meeting him.
Dragonfire. She was in Dragonfire. Patricia Quinn.
Okay, thank you. Elliot Chapman, he's there on Saturday and Sunday. And John Davey is also there on Saturday and Sunday. And then on Sunday, we've got Sarah Louise Madison. Don't know who that is. Peter Burvis, Richard Naylor, Lee John. I'm really looking forward to meeting Lee John. Again, only been in one Doctor Who story, but obviously a bit of a music legend as well. Richard Franklin, Sarah Sutton. I'm going to see meet Sarah Sutton.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I hope she's got a short skirt on. And Claire Clifford. So quite a good thing over the weekend. I'm not too sure about Friday at the moment. I'm hoping they've got some surprises for us on the Friday.
So how many autographs does this entitle you to?
It ties me to a photograph with all of the main guests that are 10th Planet, because this convention is run by 10th Planet. So that, therefore, is Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Peter Purvis, Fraser Hines, Sharon Deuce, Matthew Waterhouse, Elliot Chapman, Derek Martin. So all those main guests I have a picture with. As part of the package, and apparently I can have an autograph. And Richard Franklin and Sarah Sutton. I forgot them too, didn't I? They're included in that as well. Laurie Good apparently played, the mutants, the mutant creatures. He was one of them apparently.
Oh, this says you get a free autograph first.
Let me say goodbye because I have to leave now.
Okay, thank you, Claire. I was going to say thank you, Mary. Claire Clifford.
Enjoy your time. It sounds amazing.
I'm hoping it's going to be. Claire Clifford, by the way, played the Dalek story that Tegan left in. Can't remember what it's called now. Anyway,
I'm still here.
The Dalek story that Tegan left in. Yes?
I haven't seen it. Wait, I have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, Claire Clifford.
She left twice. She left twice.
But she properly left. She left in a Dalek story. It wasn't even leaving any other Dalek story than the one I'm talking about. Anyway, okay. She played the female soldier in that. She screamed a lot when she was killed.
I think I've seen that story once.
Okay. Anyway. Right. Also, you get an autograph with Lee John. It says. One free autograph for gold ticket holders. So that for me would be Lee John.
Oh, Lee John, the guy with too many E's. I remember.
Yeah, that's the one. He was in Enlightenment, and he was also the lead singer of Imagination, a great group from the 1980s. So with the gold package, what I have, they've got a great bit of advert here that says you get a surprise gift, a T-shirt with some weird Cyberman artwork on it. Exclusive drinks reception with the guests, although unfortunately for me on the Friday there doesn't appear to be any guests to have an exclusive drinks reception with, because I know who Sharon Deuce is because I've seen her a couple of times, but or Laurie Good is usually in a costume. Access to all talks and priority seating, a free autograph and photo shoot with all 10th Planet guests, and limited edition artwork exclusive to Dimensions 2016, only available with gold tickets. So,
awesome.
It is awesome, really. The thing that I find most awesome about that is the celebrity meal that I'll be having on the Saturday night. So all the celebrity guests that are attending this meal that are there on Saturday, which essentially could be Sylvester, Fraser, David John, Patricia Quinn, Colin Baker, Derek Martin, Matthew Waterhouse, Elliot Chapman, or John Davey. As a possibility, I'm thinking in my mind, I might be on the table with one of those celebs while eating my dinner. So fingers crossed for that one. Mm-hmm. And it's all very, very exciting. So I go up on Thursday, have an evening with my family who live up there. Then I go to the Travelodge Hotel for 3 nights. And I think that the Saturday's quite a long one. It starts at 7 a.m. and finishes, obviously, after this evening meal. So it's, I think, quite an intense weekend, but quite good fun. So really looking forward to it. So fingers crossed.
And are you going to try to give us a live feed at some point?
I'm going to try and do a few little live thingies. And also, I've had a bit of conflab with the runners of the convention who said that if I want to arrange interviews to find them and ask them, and I might be able to get some interviews as well. So, but I'll have my recorders with me.
I hope you have a better chance of doing it than when I asked Matthew.
I'm
just digging Matthew.
It'll be an added bonus if I'm able to, you know, get anything from any of the celebs on there. But, you know, I'll have, hopefully, if the airport allow me to take it, I'll have a recording device with me. But the things do say that they have to have fully charged batteries in them. So I might have to take the devices without batteries and buy batteries when they get up there. But fingers crossed for that one. But I will try and do some live video from the convention.
Excellent.
But anyway.
Excellent.
So the only thing we haven't done on this show is the sponsors, which is probably quite a good idea to do because we haven't actually seen whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
It was last time I looked. For a while.
And yes, I've repeated that with every single episode I've been on.
Yes, thank you. History of Humankind by Justin Richards is a book.
I don't dare bring up the webpage.
No, don't.
I'll try.
You don't have to because I can see it.
Oh, yeah, but I want to look.
Oh, Alan T. Butcher says it was Resurrection of the Daleks, the Dalek story that Claire Thingamajig was in. He also said Dragonfire was the other story you were talking about.
Yes.
And then he said that she was in Ghostlight. And Anne-Marie Blackall says, have a great time at your convention, Adam Pearson. Have to go to help with supper. Bye. Thanks, Anne-Marie. I'm going to be going as well in a minute because I should have gone to bed ages ago. 12 Doctors of Christmas is a book by Jacqueline Rayner and all. I suppose that's just about Doctor of Christmas specials.
Probably.
Time Lord Fairy Tales Second Edition is a great big box full of books by several authors.
But it's only £20. That's not bad.
Yeah, I've had a box of Doctor Who books I never read. Well, I did do the audio book of Stone Rose. Brilliant story, though. So you get a chance to read the book Stone Rose or listen to the audio. I'd highly recommend that. Doctor Who Magazine 504 is out. Get that from Who Won much quicker if you live elsewhere in the world. And A Unit Shutdown, which is a CD. I don't know if it's an audiobook CD or an audio drama. I think it's an audio drama. It is. It must be a Big Finish thing.
Yeah, it looks like a Big Finish thing. Yeah. I did. 270.
Yeah, she went all share then, which is without anybody else on the podcast, can get a bit awkward. So that's whowon.co.uk. Lavazzi.co.uk is coming up to Christmas,
guys. My favourite of our sponsors.
Yes, where you can get a large quantity of different Doctor Who products and Star Trek products. So scarves, jumpers, little lapel badges, etc., etc. So Kirby's favourite sponsors. Yes, so if you want a fairly authentic looking Doctor Who scarf, that's the place to go. And of course, the audible.co.uk/20MB, where you can, if you get a free subscription for one story, whether you decide to keep the subscription or not. And if you do decide to keep the subscription, then you get one free audiobook per month, I believe. That's how it works, along with any others you might want to buy in that period of time. Very good service. So that's audible.co.uk/20MB, 20MB.
I was about to ask if you said it. I will pass.
That sounds really funny, Kirby, but mind. I don't know how you're going to do. You're going to sign off when you sound like that at the moment. But anyway, Debbie Melrose has joined. Debbie sent me a message. Sorry, I've got a message from Debbie.
She sent it to me too.
No, she didn't. She sent it to me. It might have bounced to you, but she actually sent it to me. It said, "Isla's okay. Sorry for the abrupt leaving. She threw up her cough gack. She has a nasty cough, but is already snoring again." Yeah, Isabella used to do that. You should get a coughing fit and always used to throw up during a coughing fit.
Yeah, she sent that to all of us.
No, she meant to send it to me, but she sent it on the wrong thread because she's being all mummy at the moment. You get a bit muddled sometimes when you're mummies. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's essentially it until next week, or maybe a little bit after next week, because if I'm gathering audio material at this convention, I'll be putting it together after I get back. So there will be a show.
I'm looking forward to it.
There'll be a show between now and this Beer Head from Space show, which will be 322.
This sounds like it's going to be a lot smaller than the last thing you went to. I think you'll enjoy a smaller venue.
Well, we'll see. I've never been to a convention before, so it'll be interesting for me to actually attend one. And the other thing I was going to say, I've forgotten now. What were we talking about before?
I don't know. Doctor Who.
Yeah, we're talking about... Yeah.
Audible.
No, I was going to say that obviously we've got the Spear for the Space after that. Shut up! And we've got, so I've got to put the thing together, haven't I? Yes. I was trying to think what I've got to do in regards to Doctor Who and between now and then. I was talking about the live feeds. Yes, pay attention to the live feeds that I'm hoping will go out on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group in relation to, as of Friday, when I'm actually at the convention. I might even do something on Thursday, but probably won't. So be with my family. But until then, have a good time. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Is an AAPVServices.co.uk production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is sponsored by WhoWon.co.uk, Lavazzi.co.uk and Audible.com. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.